Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out of a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight, feel alright, I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
Oh. Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on this Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday.
Yeah, two for Tuesday. Yeah.
Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, welcome to the show. Coming up. After the 1:30 news, I am so thrilled to welcome back to the show. It's been a long time. Director Andrew Davis is going to be here. He is the director of Under Siege, Code of Silence, Chain Reaction, Above the Law, and, of course, The Fugitive, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary. And there's going to be an event called Made in Chicago, a screening of The Fugitive at the Music Box Theater. That's this Friday, the 23rd, at 7 o'clock, and Andrew Davis is going to be there. The director of The Fugitive will be there for a Q&A and introduce the movie and have some fun, and it'll be a really, really great event. And it's part of the 90th anniversary of the Music Box. They've got a lot of really cool stuff planned to celebrate 90 years of the Music Box Theater. And again, this Friday, if you've never seen it on the big screen, you should. It's The Fugitive with Harrison Ford. And director Andrew Davis will be there at the theater to talk about the movie and much, much more. Let's see. We are also going to talk about some of the dumbest trends that ever existed on social media. And there have been some really stupid things that people have done on social media. And we will go through some of those. And you'll remember most of them. And if you have some dumb trends that you saw plastered all over social media for a little while, you know, they usually last, what do they last, like month, 2 months, then they're usually gone. Maybe a little bit shorter, maybe a little bit longer. But stupid things that happened on social media, we'll be talking about that. And there's some, you know, it's summertime, vacation time, so we're going to talk about the friendliest states in America and some of the strangest museums in the country. So that's all coming up right here on the show. Again, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show, which is interactive. Whatever's happening on the show is happening on the Facebook page. So you should like us right now at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Also, subscribe to our podcast. It's free. Lots and lots of people listen to our podcast. We appreciate that. I know a lot of people can't stay up between 1 and 5 a.m. every weekday morning. So the podcast is the best way to go. Subscribe, go to iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. It's free. Every single second of every single show is podcast, and it'll be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there you go. All right, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
All right, man, how are you?
Very good.
Yeah?
Feeling good.
All right.
It's a Tuesday morning.
It is a Tuesday morning. We got some Two for Tuesdays that'll be coming up. And the requests will come in at 312-981-7200. Excited about Andrew Davis?
Yeah, you know, I actually didn't know this until today. He directed a movie that I adored growing up, a Disney movie of all things.
Holes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And
with little Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, little Shia LaBeouf. You got so many, John Voight as Mr. Sir.
Yeah.
Which, that book was a game changer for me growing up. I loved Holes. Still one of my favorite.
Terrific movie.
Yeah, great movie.
He did a great job with it, yeah.
Sigourney Weaver as the warden. And, you know, no wonder I loved it so much. It was directed by Andy Davis.
Andy Davis, right.
The guy's a legend.
Yeah, he's done so many great movies. And, you know, The Fugitive, obviously, was a massive hit. All kinds of Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture. And, of course, Tommy Lee Jones won the Oscar for Supporting Actor.
And didn't he get Best Director? He got nominated for Best Director.
Which,
well deserved.
That was 93, so there was no chance in hell that any other movie was going to win than Schindler's List.
Yeah, of course.
And that was the, you know, that was the year that it was like, okay, clearly Spielberg's going to get his Oscar and he's going to get, you know, for Schindler's List.
Yeah. So. But the nom was big.
Oh, no, huge. Yeah, huge. Him, I mean, yeah. 7 nominations total for The Fugitive.
For an action movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoever would have thought.
And it did huge business at the box office. I mean, it was a massive film. And it was obviously it made a lot of money here because, you know, most of it was shot, almost all of it was shot here. And that's another thing about Andy Davis. He's from Chicago and he knows how to use this city better than maybe any other director who's ever shot a movie here.
Him and maybe Michael Mann.
Michael Mann uses the city well. But Paul Brickman's only directed 2 movies.
Yeah.
Which is a real shame. I mean, he directed Risky Business and then Men Don't Leave. Have you seen Men Don't Leave?
I have not seen Men Don't Leave.
Yeah, you got to see it. It takes place in Baltimore, but it was shot here.
That's an interesting move.
Yeah, no, but it was shot because Brickman loves this city.
Of course.
And so he shot it here and, you know, it takes place outside of Baltimore and in Baltimore. But it was shot here with locations that were like, in fact, there's a scene where 2 kids are running underneath the L. And I'm like, that's not Baltimore.
Does Baltimore have an L?
I don't know. And I don't think so.
But
here's what's unfortunate. Here's what I know about Baltimore. Everything I know about Baltimore comes from The Wire.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I've been there. I've been to Baltimore. I've been there twice. And I do know that Camden Yards is a fantastic baseball park.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked Baltimore while I was there. And Michelle Pfeiffer's character in Scarface is from Baltimore.
True.
Because he goes, Baltimore, after she says that she's from Baltimore. Baltimore! So, but yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Men Don't Leave.
Men Don't Leave. A great movie.
It's on the list.
A great, great movie. Jessica Lange, it was Chris O'Donnell's first movie. Charlie Korsmo, little kid who would go on to be in Dick Tracy and Can't Hardly Wait, was in it. Arliss Howard. Kathy Bates, one of her first movies.
Wow.
Yeah, pre-Misery.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, a great, beautiful movie, and nobody saw it, and Brickman just stopped making movies after that. He's only directed 2 movies. In my opinion, they're both masterpieces. You know, Risky Business, come on.
It's Risky Business.
Yeah.
I mean, that's in that conversation with The Fugitive,
yeah.
The Chicago movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no question about it. No question about it. Is Claude Rains in the newsroom?
Claude Rains?
Yeah, he played the Invisible Man. Is Vic in there? I don't see Vic.
He's hanging out over by the. Hold on, 1 second.
Is he doing? Is he writing stories? Because is he busy? I just wanted to say hi to him. We can get right back to work.
I can literally see him. I can. He's hiding in there.
Where is he? Are we looking at the same?
So I can see him through the sports window. Now he's up.
Oh, there he is.
Hey,
well, working on a story right now.
Oh, okay.
At the
I'm sorry. Okay, I didn't. You know, I figured that's what you were doing, I just wanted to do the official hello.
Yep.
Okay. Well, Vic's in the newsroom and he's hard at work. All right, Vic. Sorry to bug you, man.
Love
just
you guys.
Wanted to say hello. There's Vic. He's working hard, writing some news. There you go. All right. Yeah. So, Andy Davis, fantastic filmmaker. We've got some really good guests this for the rest of the week. Brian Usna is going to be on tomorrow. His movie, which not a lot of people have seen, a crazy film called Society that he directed. And, you know, he worked with Stuart Gordon and, you know, he worked on the Reanimator movies. And
From Beyond.
From Beyond, which is just amazing.
Nuts.
You know who's really cool? Barbara Crampton.
Very much so.
She was at Flashback. She's been to Flashback like 3 times. Fantastic. And her and Jeffrey Combs I did 2 of their Q&As over the years. And Barbara Crampton is cool as hell. Like she's very, very cool and accommodating and really, really sweet and also a big fan. So like she was starstruck by other people that were there. I remember one year that they came Barbara Crampton was kind of freaked out because Linda Blair was there. And she was like, she was like freaked out because of Linda Blair. Dana's the same way. My future ex-wife, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo, her first big horror movie that she saw when she was a kid was The Exorcist. And that performance, you know, affected her a lot. And so she actually did do a con with Linda Blair and has a very interesting story that I will tell you someday about her encounter with Linda Blair at the convention. My my future ex-wife, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo. So, but
I'd get starstruck by her.
Yeah, well,
I'd be like, whoa.
Yeah, no, but Barbara Crampton, you know, and the and all the boys like her, you know.
Sure.
I mean, all you got to do is see Reanimator and From Beyond, and you're like, mm-hmm, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's just a lot of guys in her line to get autographs and pictures.
Yeah, you know, I'd imagine that if you were a young man and you saw Reanimator for the first time, that'd probably be a bit somewhat of an awakening.
And then follow it up with From Beyond.
Jeez.
Look at yourself. I remember when Ken Foray is screaming at her when she's got the bondage outfit on. Look at yourself.
Brian Usno, just really seems like an unhinged mind.
He is. And when you work with Stuart Gordon, he's nuts.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a wonderful guy. Started the Remains Theater here in Chicago. Been on the show a few times. A great guy and insane. He makes insane movies. But anyway, Brian's going to be here. He's at the Music Box showing Society. And then, of course, Feinberg's going to be with us. Dan Feinberg, we got to talk about TV. Lots of TV to talk about with Dan. That'll be Thursday morning. And then Friday morning, Esmeralda's going to be here.
Yeah.
Esmeralda Leon will come by. And we'll have a lot of fun with her. It's always great to have Esmeralda in. So there you go. All right. So let's take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to get back to these 80s snacks. I know I've been holding on to this.
Really teasing it.
Teasing it. This has been like 3 weeks worth of teasing, but we're going to get to some of them now. Some weird snacks that we had in the 80s. They're real. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And then after the 130 news, Andy Davis is going to be here, director of The Fugitive.
Oh, yeah. I looked out the window, seeing this bull head. Ran through the fridge and pulled out an egg. Scrubbed over my scrubs, he had no hair.
Launched that shot, he was caught out there.
Saw the convertible driving.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here till 5. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. You made 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Joining us after the 130 news will be the terrific director, Andrew Davis. They're screening his movie The Fugitive with Harrison Ford this Friday, the 23rd, at the Music Box Theater. Starting at 7 o'clock, and he will be there. So we'll talk about his career and The Fugitive and all kinds of other cool stuff. Really great guy, and he's coming up. We're also going to be talking about some of the stupid stuff that has dominated social media. Some of the dumbest trends that have ever existed on social media, and it'll bring back some ridiculous memories. There's so many dumb things that happen on social media, so we'll get to that. But right now, we've talked about this a little bit here and there, and I've been hanging on to it. 1980s snacks we're not sure people would eat today. We ate a lot of weird stuff in the 80s. When we talked about this, we got sidetracked one of the last times we talked about it because Vic and I started talking about how amazing Jack-in-the-Box tacos are, the fantastic deep-fried Jack-in-the-Box tacos. And the very, very, very similar Burger King tacos that you can get for a buck. And they are as close to the greasy, wonderful, moist, greasy, crunchy Jack-in-the-Box tacos that you can get. The best. So that's how we got sidetracked. We started talking about Jack-in-the-Box tacos. And the Burger King tacos that are available now. But we're also talking about, like, sweet, goofy snacks. Like, for instance, Funny Feet. This is before your time because this is the 80s, Tom. But Funny Feet. Okay, there was one ice cream that was a little weirder than the Fat Frog, and that was Funny Feet. They came shaped like misshapen feet. Sure, these would look pretty amazing on Instagram today, especially since the foot is a pretty light pink color, but it's still it's a very weird product, and you'll probably remember it if you used to hang around the ice cream truck after school. And it was re-released in 2013. I vaguely remember Funny Feet. It's just ice cream that's shaped like a foot, like a weird foot. And I'm not sure who thought that that would be an appetizing design. Hey, I got an idea. Let's make an ice cream that's shaped like a foot, because you know everybody likes to eat feet.
Yeah. I'm even looking at the when they re-released it.
Yeah.
And even there's a sticker on the box, because you get the box at like a grocery store. It has the word new scratched out. Old. Back from the 80s.
Ah, there you go.
That looks horrible.
Funny Feet.
That looks really... Those are some weird looking feet.
How about Squeeze It? There's no E on the end. It's SQUEEZ-IT. Squeeze It. You might picture these drinks in the 90s, but they actually came out in the 80s. According to Huffington Post, they were launched in 1985. Not only did each Squeeze It have a flavor, but they had a name. And since they were a drink, you were more or less killing them with every gulp. They were discontinued in 2001. Now, I remember these, Keebler's Tato Skins. You know how...
Like
you know,
Keebler Elves?
Yeah, well, Keebler, he makes a lot of food that isn't just cookies, and I don't know if it all comes out of the tree or not, out of the workshop in the tree. But Tato Skins, I remember because you know, like there was a time when like potato skins took off, you know, at bars and at restaurants and stuff. Like it became the, you know, potato skins became the go-to appetizer at your Applebee's or places of that ilk. So Keebler thought it would be pretty cool to throw those to do like a potato chip version of Tato Skins. Keebler sure thought you did if you like potato skins back in 1985. And sure, the word snack is pretty loose. You can snack on anything throughout the day, but you may not be tempted to snack on these two-sided chips since they look a bit odd. You don't need to mess with potato chips. They're good as is. You don't need a weird and polarizing gimmick to work. I liked the Tato Skins. I liked the Keebler Tato Skins. I thought they were tasty. They did look a little unappetizing. They didn't. Visually, they were not the most compelling thing that you would eat. But they were tasty.
I think they look all right. I'd eat those.
Not
too bad.
How about this? Dixie's Snack Crackers. Back in the early 80s, Nabisco made a snack cracker like no other. They called them Dixie Snack Crackers, but they really should have been called Dixie's Chicken Crackers. That's because they were actually shaped like chicken drumsticks. It's cute at first, but it's also a little strange because a shape like that doesn't really have a strong audience. Either you're at home eating a box of chicken drumstick crackers alone, or you're awkwardly serving them at a party hoping that they go with the cheese. I remember those things. The reason why I'm familiar with all of like almost everything in this article is because I worked at the Jewels in the 80s.
Yeah, you were stocking it.
I was. I was putting it all on the shelves in the 80s. I worked at the Jewels from 81 to 91 or
wow.
92. 11 years. I worked there almost 11 years.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's some tenure.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad has been working at the Jewels over there at Irving and Narragansett now. Jeez, I want to say 12 years. My
wow.
dad's been there now 12 years.
That's good.
Yeah, he worked last night. Said it wasn't very busy.
No.
Yep.
But he's still pulling out the jokes.
He's still every time, man. People go into my dad's, you know, the cashier where my dad is bagging just so they can get a joke from my dad. And they can, you know. Those lines are a little bit longer when my dad is bagging.
When he showed me the picture of his ex, that was...
Well, that's, you know...
That's a classic.
That's part of his routine right there.
Well, I love the gags.
Oh, it's all a routine. So, okay, we're going to break here. There's a little bit more of the snack, and I still have more of them. We can save them for another time. 80s snacks, everybody. Let's go get some Funny Feet. All right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up, and then director Andrew Davis will join us to talk about the 25th anniversary screening of The Fugitive at the Music Box. That's after the news.
Chicago, and it's back for New Orleans.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here on a Tuesday morning. 2 for Tuesday, get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit later in the show, we are going to be talking about some of the dumbest trends that ever existed on social media. And there are some doozies over the years that we will be reminded of. We're also going to talk a little vacation stuff, like the strangest museum in every state, the friendliest states in America, and tourist traps are just part of what's going on in the show this morning. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, I would like to welcome back to the show. It's been a while since we've had this guest on, a terrific filmmaker who has directed such great movies as Under Siege, Code of Silence, Above the Law, The Package, Chain Reaction, and of course, The Fugitive. And there's a special event made in Chicago, The Fugitive, a screening at the Music Box Theater. As part of the Music Box, if you can believe this, 90th anniversary. Music Box has been around for 90 years. And it's this Friday, August 23rd at 7 o'clock. And the director of that movie is Andrew Davis, and he's going to be there to host the screening, and we want to welcome him back to the show. Andrew, how you doing?
Wow, what do I say after that kind of introduction?
How you been, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me. So I want to say something. I looked you up because I was a journalism major.
Yeah.
And I see that you started with Roy Leonard.
I did. Yes. That's how I got my. I basically owe my entire career to the guy.
Yeah. Well, I have someone like that, Haskell Wexler. But anyway, it was interesting because he was so kind to me, and every time I was in Chicago, I'd be on a show, and he gave me great reviews. So I see a connection there.
Yeah, no, he's the best. He really was the best, and a great guy, and I know firsthand that he loved your work. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
So it's been a while, Andrew. You know, the last time I saw you, you came and see a play that I wrote and directed.
What was that?
That was when it was you and McNaughton and Fitzpatrick. You came to see a play called Black and Blue, which was about the Cubs and Sox fans.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was the last time I saw it. It was a long time ago. It was about 7 years ago, I think.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I think my daughter had just started graduate school there at the time.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think we were talking. Yeah. We talked about that. Well, listen, it's so great to have you back. How about, can you believe the Music Box is 90 years old?
You know, I have to make a huge apology.
Mm-hmm.
When they called and said this is going to be at the Music Box, and I said, "Oh, I still live right down the street from there." I got the Music Box and the 400 mixed up.
Oh, but my producer Tom,
but then I have a way out. I have a way out because if he was a really good investigator, I said, "Yeah, I went to Field Elementary School." Well, that's two blocks away in Rogers Park.
Right.
Understand?
Right. Yeah. Tom used to work at he was a manager at the 400.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah. So the 400.
So anyway, I was basically I lived in Rogers Park until I was seven.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to swim at San Leon Park.
Oh, nice.
On the north side. And then we lived in a one-bedroom apartment. It was tiny. And my father was able to buy a house on the south side by the steel mills in Jeffrey Manor, Trumbull Park area.
Yeah.
So I became a Southsider very early. So I see you grew up near Wrigley Field. You know, we were Sox fans.
Yes, I know. Yeah, and like, you know, as I was telling you, Andrew, when you guys came to see the show, all three of you guys, McNaughton, you, and Fitzpatrick, were all Sox fans, and the play was about the difference between the Sox fans and the Cubs fans.
No, it was brilliant. It was really great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Thank you. So, you know, I mean, yes, obviously, your Southsider first film, Stony Island. Tell me about making that one. That was obviously a personal film.
Very, very. My brother starred in it. Well, I had seen Mean Streets, and I'd seen American Graffiti, you know, and I was a young cameraman who was doing pretty well shooting pictures, and I couldn't get in the union. It was really hard to get in the union.
Yeah.
And so I said, it's easier to be a director than an IA cameraman. So I started trying to think, what can I tell my story to be about? And my brother was this kid growing up on the South Side, 9800 Southeast, Eddie Verdoliak's ward.
Yeah, yeah.
And my parents refused to move when the neighborhood became mostly black. And so he grew up as a white kid in a black neighborhood, and he became a musician, and I thought that would be a good story to tell.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie. Was it a fun movie for you to make?
Oh yeah, I mean it was a lot of work. We had no money. Everything was written down on a piece of paper. You know, there were no computers. There were hardly Xerox machines. You know, and so keeping track of information and raising the money was a lot of work. But we were able to put it together. It was a $300,000 movie in 1978.
$300,000. Wow.
Yeah, and you know, we had to raise it. We had friends of friends, and even some politicians that got involved in it. You know, it was really interesting, and we were able to pull it off. And luckily, we sold it for near the negative cost to a distributor when we were done, which is hard to do. In those days, there were maybe 10 independent movies.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah.
So now there are 4,000 submissions to Sundance.
Right. Right, it's a different world, yeah.
It's a different world. So anyway, that was the calling card. It opened at the Woods Theater, played at the Three Penny, and maybe the Biograph, played in Hyde Park, played in different places. And the tragedy was that black kids started going into white neighborhoods to see it, and the fear, the racial fear at the time was, we don't want this to happen from the theater owners.
Yeah.
So they pulled the movie, and the distributor renamed the movie "My Main Man from Stony Island." Tried to sell it as a blaxploitation movie, which it wasn't.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it got great reviews, and everybody did fine by it. You know, Dennis Franz's first movie.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so it went on, and it was this calling card for a lot of people. And it's interesting because we did a making of a few years ago with Quincy Jones and a few other people who have connections to Stony Island, and you see what's happened to Susie Hoffs in the Bengals, was the Richie's girlfriend in that story.
Yeah. Wow, it's amazing. A great snapshot of that period of time too. Really, you know, one of the things that I love about your movies is that you know how to use this city, and I mean that in the kindest way possible. Because I can't tell you the number of movies that are shot here in Chicago by people who really don't know the city, and I don't know how many shots of Buckingham Fountain we got to get, or you know, the shots of going southbound on Lakeshore Drive. Those are the things that you expect, but you use great neighborhoods and really great locations. I particularly love the use of our city in Code of Silence. Those are some of my favorite uses of Chicago. How do you go about picking where you're going to shoot?
Well, I don't know. It was like, people live in apartments that have stairways in the back. If you're going to rob it, how are you going to get in and get out? You know, and you'd better be by the L. You know, we used to ride the L, get on at 63rd and Stony, and I lived originally on Lunt, right? So the L was a fabric of my whole life, and I think ever my movies in Chicago have L scenes in them, lots of L traffic.
Yeah.
So you know, it just became natural for me to do that stuff.
Yeah. But you really do capture it, the city differently than pretty much anybody else. And I do want to mention really quickly, have I ever told you the experience of me seeing Under Siege for the first time?
No.
Okay, let me tell you the story, Andrew. For some reason, Gary Busey was in town. He was filming a movie called the Rookie of the Year, where the kid broke his arm. He was in,
and he
can throw real fast, so he became a pitcher for the Cubs. Anyway, Gary was in that movie, and I met him at a bar one night, and ended up hanging out with him for about 6 days straight, which was insane. And I saw Under Siege
during your drinking days.
Yes, actually, Andrew. Yes, but I said this is the manner in which I saw Under Siege. I had hung out with him for a few days. I told him that Warner Brothers was screening it at the Esquire, right down the street from where he was staying. He was staying at the Westin, across from the Hancock, and. And he's like, "Well, you think I can get in?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I think you can. You're in the movie. I'm pretty sure you can get in." And he's like,
"He hadn't seen it."
No, he hadn't seen it. And he was like, "I'll go with you." And I'm like, "Okay, you can come with me." So I saw Under Siege with Gary Busey sitting next to me, basically doing DVD commentary running throughout the entire movie. It was unbelievable.
Now, were there other people in the screening room?
Yeah. It was at the Esquire Theater. It was a packed house.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So it wasn't like everybody heard him, just a few people.
He was just like leaning over to me going, "No, you know, Tommy Lee and I, we improvised this whole scene." You know, he's doing stuff like that during the
film. Yeah, it's true. true. We wrote it on the spot. Yeah, no, it was interesting because, you know, I gave him the book of the ship's book with all the history and all that stuff. And he's looking through and he sees all these guys dressed like girls. Right? So he says, "Andy, gotta do this. I said, "Cool, Larry. You know, we'll work it out. So the studio goes, oh, just a minute, you got to shoot this both ways. We're not sure about this. You know? So I don't think we did shoot it both ways, but anyway, but right away it was a huge hit for that scene, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was a pretty incredible experience sitting next to him. Yeah, and yes, during the drag scene, he's like, "This was I wanted to do this. I wanted to put the dress on." You know, he was telling me the whole thing while it was happening in real time. It was pretty amazing. So, all right, Andrew, hang out, okay?
Okay.
Andrew Davis is with us. He's a terrific filmmaker. And when we come back, we're going to talk about The Fugitive. It is 25 years old. Fugitive is 25 years old. I can't believe that. And we're going to there's a screening of it that Andrew's going to be there live in person. It's this Friday, the 23rd, at the Music Box Theater. And it starts at 7 o'clock. And we'll come back more with Andy Davis right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here on 720 WGN, here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude till 5 here every weekday morning. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right. My guest right now is a terrific filmmaker, Andrew Davis, and a great Chicagoan who has made such terrific movies as Under Siege and Code of Silence, Above the Law, and, of course, The Fugitive, which is having a screening this Friday night at the Beautiful Music Box Theater. And it's at 7 o'clock. And let's welcome Andrew back. Andrew, welcome back, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. So, The Fugitive, how did that one come to you?
Premiere party for Under Siege, Arnold Copeland, the producer, came up to me and said, "I know your next movie." And I didn't really know Arnold very well. He had produced, he financed Platoon, and so he had a hot reputation.
Yeah.
And I got a call that Sunday from the head of production, Bruce Berman's, congratulating me, and I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, Harrison saw Under Siege over the weekend, and he's approved you to direct The Fugitive."
Mm.
So that was pretty nice.
Yeah.
And Under Siege was a big hit for the studio that fall. So we were, Peter McGregor Scott, my dear producer, and I were in good stead. And, you know, we got involved. The script was in really pretty bad shape. It needed a lot of work, and Harrison had committed to it. And we started figuring out how to turn this into something that could be relevant today, you know. And I wanted Tommy to play Gerard, and that happened, and I wanted to go to Chicago because Harris and I were both from Chicago, and that happened.
Yeah,
and we were it was a very collaborative, wonderful experience because we had great support from the studio. We had a huge talent around us, both in front of the camera and behind the camera, and we were able to sort of do it on the fly, which I think gave the film a kind of energy that makes it what it is, because it wasn't sort of, you know, thought out in terms of every single line and every single shot. It was something that you sort of did on the fly, which gave it the reality that I think it has.
Yeah, and the acting in it is just, you know, obviously at its core, it's an action film, but the acting in it is just superlative. Everybody in it is so good, and I particularly like the stuff between Tommy Lee Jones and Joey Pants. I just think Joe Pantoliano is just a national treasure, as far as I'm concerned, and
Joey and I met when I was the first film I was hired on after Stony Island was made was by Joe Roth, who became a huge producer. Sam Markoff was his father-in-law, and I did a little horror movie
right.
that Joey was in, and he played the bus driver and the monster at the same time, and so we became dear friends, and he was in several of my films. You know, he was in Steel Big, Steel Little,
right?
And he's a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Yeah, he's great to watch. He really is. And but you know, the Fugitive. First of all, obviously one of the classic scenes in the film, at least from our point of view as Chicagoans, as you shot during the St. Patrick's Day parade. You know, which is just like worldwide people know Chicago's St. Patrick's Day parade. Tell me about the coverage on that. I mean, was it difficult to shoot that?
Well, we you know, there was a big chase through City Hall, and Harrison escapes, and Tommy had to go after him, and we didn't want to, you know, French Connection had been done by Bill Friedkin already, you know, we were going to have another car chase under the L. So I'd wanted to put the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Stony Island, and Richard died. Richard the First died.
Mm, right.
And his funeral is in Stony Island, but not the St. Patrick's Day Parade. So I said, why don't we have him run out of City Hall, where we're right there by the Picasso, and shoot the parade. And we got permission from the plumbers, and we got permission. We had just a few Steadicam camera and a couple of things running around, and we just grabbed it. We just grabbed it. And, you know, and Harrison picked up a hat on his own. It wasn't planned. Put it on. And, you know, we just sort of worked through the crowd.
Yeah. It's a great sequence. It really is. I would also, in speaking of The Fugitive, I would also like to thank you for casting Julianne Moore in early part of her career, because she's one of the greats, and she's really terrific in the Fugitive.
Well, sorry, because she was just on some big show. Somebody told me about it. And the thing is, poor Julianne and I had a tough time, because she was supposed to have a romantic scene with Harrison, and in about the 10 minutes before we're supposed to start shooting, we cannot do this. This is going to destroy the story of his wife dying. And
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so she became the doctor who knows that Harrison saved a life, and, you know, he's under scrutiny from Tommy. She was terrific in the movie. But I think in her young career, she'd only done like a movie before that, in Cookie, I think, with Robert Altman, that she said, oh, I can't have a love scene with Harrison Ford, you know?
Yeah. That was a little disappointing for her. How long did it take to shoot The Fugitive?
I don't really. It wasn't long. I think it was under 60 days, 50 some days, 52 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really impressive. And the and the bus scene with the train, putting that together, what was that like?
Well, Peter McGregor Scott and Roy Arbogast, our special effects supervisor, really were instrumental in figuring how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we knew what the pictures should look like, but physically getting it to happen and making it real. So basically, what we found is an unused rail line in North Carolina. It's the only thing in the movie shot not in Chicago. It's the dam scene and that scene.
Yeah.
And Peter figured out how to push an empty train. We took the engines out of the engine and push it from behind and have it derailed into a pre-made trough that would catch it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was basically a one-shot deal, and we had 20-some cameras, and, you know, many extra crew people came down for it. I was actually shooting the bus when they were setting it up. And then they said, go, and that was it.
Wow.
And it was there the next day as this incredible set piece. We didn't have to do digital trains. We could walk by it. You know, you could walk by it at night.
Yeah.
And it became, and then later on, it's funny because later on it became a tourist attraction down there.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, that's great. That's really great. So can you believe it's been 25 years since the release of The Fugitive? Man.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because the picture's playing all the time. It's on television around the world every day.
Yeah.
And there's been this anniversary and that anniversary, and so it seems to be alive. I wish I could make another movie like that today, you know. They don't make those kind of movies too much anymore.
Right.
But it's both long ago and right here.
Yeah. Well, it is a great movie. It's a timeless one, I think. And
thank you.
People will be talking about it on Friday night. Are you excited about being at the screening at the Music Box?
Well, a lot of dear friends and cast and crew members are going to be there, I think.
Okay, that's great.
It'll be a nice reunion for those people and for me to see them. And I'm going to enjoy, you know, seeing the movie in a great setting, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. Made in Chicago, The Fugitive is being screened at the beautiful Music Box Theater. If you've never seen it on the big screen, you have to. It's this Friday, August 23rd at 7 o'clock. And on top of that, Andrew Davis is going to be there. It's great catching up with you again, Andrew. And have fun on Friday, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Nick. Good night.
Take care. There you go. Andrew Davis, everybody. Terrific director. If you've not seen The Fugitive, you should. If you've not seen The Fugitive on the big screen, you must. And it's Music Box Theater this Friday night at 7 o'clock. You can go to musicboxtheater.com for more information. The great Andrew Davis. Okay, we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. The news is up next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It is Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday.
You mean 2 for Tuesday.
One artist, two songs. Who requested the Creedence?
That's coming to us from our friend Big Ed.
Big Ed with a little Creedence this morning on 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. So, social media.
What a dumpster fire.
It is. For the most part, it's ridiculous. You know, sometimes it's a helpful tool. But a lot of the times it's, you know, you have to take everything on social media with 9,000 tons of grains of salts. And then there are also these dumb trends and these challenges and things that have popped up over the years on social media. And that's what we're talking about. If you want to jump in here, what are some of the more ridiculous ones, that have taken place? And, so this is from Ask.com, and it is the dumbest trends to ever exist on social media. And as soon as I saw this yesterday afternoon, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, well, we got to talk about this. So if you have any of these stupid challenges or trends or things that happened on social media, were hot for maybe a month or two, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Like, for instance, this is a recent one. The Storm Area 51, They Can't Stop All of Us event. That's one of the more recent ones. And again, it overtook, like, if you looked at your news feed or your social media, if you're on your Twitter or you're on your Facebooks or you're on your Instagrams, it was all over the place on the news feeds. In the summer of 2019, 2 million Facebook users hopped on a virtual bandwagon to storm the legendary Area 51. The event, which eventually caught the attention of government officials, was removed from Facebook after violating the site's community guidelines. The U.S. military released a threatening statement ahead of the event, discouraging anyone from trying to break into an area where they train armed forces. Area 51 has remained an extraterrestrial mystery for decades, and it looked like the mystery will have to continue. I just thought that this is just, you know, an example of some of the really stupid stuff that we see on social media and the trends that we see that are just absurd. I do love the They Can't Stop All of Us. And they're going to storm Area 51, and the military was like, you know what? You might not want to do that. I mean, you know, maybe you just think that this is just an area that's not guarded and that is very secretive and, oh, you're going to find aliens or whatever. But actually, this is a military installment, and you might not want to try and bomb rush a military installment that's being guarded by the U.S. military. I mean, that's a real thing. But 2 million Facebook users jumped on that one. Storm Area 51, They Can't Stop All of Us event.
I mean, it's still supposed to happen.
It's supposed to happen in September, right?
Yeah, September 20th, 2019.
So a month from today.
Month from today.
Month from today, people are going to storm Area 51. They Can't Stop All of Us. We ever discover where these things really come from? Like, can we track down the idiot who thought that this would be a good idea? And I mean, you know, some of these trends that we're going to be talking about, and these challenges, and these things that popped up all over social media for a little while, it's hard to pinpoint exactly who started it. Like, to go back and try and trace the origin of someone saying, "Hey, let's storm Area 51." Not the brightest thing in the world.
No, I can't imagine that it started out in any serious way other than, hey, wouldn't it be funny?
Yes, that I can understand. You know what I mean?
I mean, they know who some of them are, some of the organizers, because it was on Facebook. So
right.
It's public, and you more or less have to give a real name.
Right.
So Washington Post did a look into it. There's a guy, Brock Daly, who's an Arkansas college student and just one of the organizers of the festival.
His name is Brock Daly?
Yeah, and then there's Matthew Roberts, who is credited here in this Washington Post article as the Storm Area 51 creator.
Oh, okay. So that's the guy who's credited as the guy who started the
whole according to the Washington Post.
What about poor Brock?
He's just
Just Brock.
He's a pawn.
He's like Brock Lesnar. He's just he's a doofus.
Suplex City.
Yeah. All right. So that's the first one we're talking about. Now, here's what I want to hear from you guys. If you're anywhere near social media, you get bombarded with this crap every couple of weeks or every month. There is some sort of new crazy trend or challenge or goofy thing that is taking over social media. Here's the next one. The hashtag text door neighbor challenge. I don't know this one. Do you know this one?
Yeah. What this is you take your phone number and you change the last digit. So you've got area code, whatever,
yeah.
And then the last digit you change to the next number in the sequence. So if it ends in an 8, you change it to a 9 and you text them. And you text that number. Because they're your text door neighbor. They're the phone number that's directly next to yours in the sequence.
So it's the hashtag text door neighbor challenge. This disturbing trend only requires your cell phone and a lack of privacy concerns. All you have to do is text your neighbor, your number neighbor or text door neighbor, and share your exchange on social media. Your number neighbor is someone with one digit difference from your own phone number. This sounds like a harmless good time, but it's not exactly a smart move. If your number neighbor is a minor and you're not, you're entering some dicey territory. Also, not everyone wants to meet their text door neighbor, so you may not like the response you get. That's ridiculous. Have a lot of people done it?
I suppose so. It's hard to gauge how big it really is. Because
it's not really on social media, it's just like your phone.
Yeah,
right?
you're meant to share it.
Yeah.
And there's obviously more people talking about the thing than the thing itself.
Right.
So there's plenty of people making text door neighbor jokes and memes and things of that nature.
How recent is this?
This is within the last month, I'd say.
God, this one eluded me.
It's madness. It's just it's a funny concept and like. Maybe a funny prank, but when it gets ballooned by social media,
yeah,
that's when it gets weird.
I wonder if anybody out there has done this text door neighbor challenge. That just sounds dumb.
I just don't want to find out who that would be.
No,
and I'm not looking forward to in case someone does that to me. But there's literally millions upon millions upon millions of phone numbers. The likelihood that your text door neighbor is going to do it is between slim and none.
Yeah, well, I've never received a text. From anybody saying, hey, I'm your text door neighbor. And I certainly have never sent a text to anybody one digit off reaching out to my text door neighbor.
Maybe just try it. They'll be so excited.
Yeah.
Look, Nick DiGilio texted me.
Yeah. Yeah, like I want people to have my phone number. Like that's something I want. I don't even like people that I know to have my phone number, let alone a complete stranger. Okay, so this next one drives me nuts. This next one actually makes me angry. I'm not a big fan in general. I'm not a fan at all of selfies. Not a fan at all. Like I don't take them. I'll take pictures with people. You know, but I usually have somebody else hold the phone and take it. I do not take selfies just of me by myself, you know, holding the camera or with a selfie stick or whatever the hell they're called. I've never been a fan of selfies at all. And I especially don't like this trend of selfies at serious places. In 2013, A Tumblr page launched in response to a bizarre trend writer Jason Pfeiffer noticed on vacation. As he explored the Anne Frank Memorial, tourists of all ages were taking happy selfies in front of the historically significant location. This is how Selfies at Serious Places was born. By highlighting the poor judgment behind these pics, Pfeiffer's Tumblr page made selfies at concentration camps, funerals, and Chernobyl the new cringeworthy internet fad. These types of photos shouldn't have had to be so publicly ridiculed, but at least the behavior died down as a result.
It saw sort of a resurgence this year, though, with the release of Chernobyl.
Yeah.
The HBO
people,
series.
People were going to Chernobyl and taking selfies.
Yeah. There was some dispute about whether or not that was actually happening or how staged it was, but
yeah.
Regardless, it's a stupid trend.
It is.
You should not take pictures at concentration camps, period. Whether
no,
they're serious pictures
not.
Or not, there are people who document it for you, and it's a place of thinking and remembering, not a place to share photos from, even if it is in the sort of pursuit of a serious post.
Yeah.
It's not really for posting. It's something you have to experience and be mindful of.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm just not, I mean, like I said, I'm not a big, just in general, I'm not a big selfies guy, but especially that. All right, 765 area code. I'm not familiar with this. The Drake In My Feelings channel. Oh, is that when there people are in? They're outside the car while the car is running, then they're dancing? Because that's the song that's playing, right?
Yeah, it's the song In My Feelings by Drake.
Okay, so that, okay, yeah, that, absolutely. That's a perfect example. Of idiocy. People getting out of their car with the car door open, dancing outside the car while the Drake song is playing. Do you see the guy get run over by a car?
Yeah.
There people got, you know, like, I've saw people smash into the door of the car. The idea is you set the camera up, or somebody is in the driver's, or you either set the camera up, your phone, or whatever the hell it is, and, or it's your passenger, like somebody's in the passenger seat, and they're filming you. And the car is still running. The Drake song is playing. You open the driver's side door. You get out. Now there's nobody behind the wheel of the car. And you dance to this. You do a dance to this Drake song. Then you jump back into the car, ideally. One guy got run over by another car that was driven by his girlfriend. I remember seeing it. He wasn't hurt. He wasn't.
Bumps and bruises, I'm guessing.
Yes, exactly. So that's why I'm laughing, okay? But again, he's an idiot. That guy's an idiot. He's jumping out of a moving car with no one behind the wheel dancing. These are the kind of things we're talking about, everybody.
This is the levels of boredom that society has reached.
Exactly. Hey, you know what? I'm going to jump out of a car and dance to a Drake song, and maybe I'll get run over. So, all right. Well, what do you guys have? What do you guys remember from some of these? Because there's a ton of them. We've got a lot more to get through. Jumping out of the car during a Drake song. We got more of these challenges and more of these trends that are really stupid that have dominated social media. 312-981-7200. Why am I? There's a term for. That it's an obvious term, and I'm blanking on it right now, where it's like. Not survival of the fittest, but the dumbest go down the
oh, Darwinism?
Darwinism, yeah.
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 They give awards out
yeah,
for this.
The Darwin Awards. Yeah, what I mean, you know what, man, those usually come out every year, the Darwin Awards. I haven't talked about those in a while. So anyway, these are suitable nominations for Darwin Awards, right here. These stupid trends from social media. Which ones do you guys remember? Which ones do you guys see? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday! And that's our second from Creedence this morning. If you want to get in here, it's One Artist, Two Songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're back, and we're talking about some of the dumbest challenges and or trends that have dominated social media. you know, they dominate for a couple of weeks, couple of months or something, and then they usually go away. But for a while, you know, your news feed is jammed with these stupid things. And that's what we're talking about now, these really ridiculous challenges and trends that exist on social media. And if you guys want to jump in with some that that you remember or you know, people participated in, 312-981-7200. Here's Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hello.
Yes.
yeah, hi. But the dumbest trend I think I've ever heard of, and that was a while ago, was when they were swallowing those Tide Pods or soap, whatever.
Yeah.
How ridiculous is that?
Yeah, no, it's the stupid. It is. That was one of the stupidest things I've ever seen anybody anybody do. And it was mostly like, you know, like usually it was teenagers mostly doing it.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was a really. I mean, it's beyond stupid. Eating Tide Pods, and that of course is mentioned. Thank you, Rich. That of course is mentioned here. This trend is by far one of the most dangerous internet fads in social media history. Tide released their initial packaging for the individually sized laundry pods in 2012, but the media ran wild years later with reports that children mistook them for candy and might eat them. The internet found the occasion funny, so people retaliated by filming themselves eating the pods. The clips were quickly taken down as the Tide Pod Challenge was no laughing matter. In less than a year, there were almost 8,000 cases of children poisoning themselves with laundry pods. I don't even understand. I mean, Rich, thank you for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I don't understand how anybody would even think that that is in even any sort of bright thing to do. Let's eat laundry detergent. I mean, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I was like, this is a joke, right? These are not, I mean, this, but it wasn't just a few people. A ton of people did it.
Yeah, and it actually spurred a strange internet subculture of finding things that are inedible but look like they would be edible.
Yeah.
And calling them forbidden snacks.
Yeah.
To be fair, it's very brightly colored and look like if someone made a candy version of the Tide Pod,
yeah,
I'd eat it.
Yeah.
If it were actually candy, of course, and
not laundry detergent. I mean, you know, it makes no sense to me. Like, how would any rational person think, hey, this is a good idea. I'm going to eat this laundry detergent pellet.
Gen Z is a very strange group of kids. I won't lie to you.
How about Mr. B says, how about the Tide Packet or the Hot Pepper Challenge? How dumb was that? Yeah, the Hot Pepper Challenge.
A classic, really.
Well, I mean, that's been going on for many years. The Hot Pepper, you know, and the Hot Sauce Challenge, too. Which Hot Ones is that is the show that the guy, you know, Sean...
Oh, Sean Evans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the host of. I think that's very entertaining.
Oh, it's a great show. And it's in it, but it's in like a controlled environment.
Yeah. It's a controlled environment. There's plenty of milk and they don't have to do it. The celebrities don't have to, if they don't want to, they don't have to eat. Like Ricky Gervais was out after the second hot sauce.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm not going to do it.
The Idris Elba one was amazing.
It was unbelievable.
That's become its own.
Yeah.
Its own.
It was unbelievable. I like the Key and Peele one, though. You go to hell, Sean. That was my favorite. Keegan is just like, you go to hell, Sean, after he's got the fourth bottle of hot sauce.
Did that ever happen to you as a kid? Like someone challenged you to eat a really spice pepper?
No.
You never did it?
No.
I did it once.
No, I would. I'm not going to do that.
I'm not going to do that.
I mean,
it's something very spicy. It was a habanero pepper, which are spicy, but it's not like the spiciest thing. But I had to drink like I ran up to the lunch counter and immediately bought four cartons of milk.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do that. There's no way I'd do that. No. Another text here. If you guys want to jump in with your thoughts on these stupid trends and challenges that you find on social media, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. For talking text, 773 area code says, you know, I actually text-doored neighbored by accident. I was texting myself, and I forgot why, and I never received the text. So I went back to check, and I realized that I missed the digit by one number. I text back and apologized, and they told me that they thought it was spam and appreciate me apologizing. All right, so That was a person who did the text door neighbor challenge by mistake, which, you know, that makes more sense than doing it on purpose. So, all right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're talking about these stupid challenges and trends that are all over social media and which ones were the dumbest. There's a lot more here because, you know, people are dumb. All right, we'll take a break.
We took the time, no one's to blame. My no time flies so quickly. But when I see you, darling, it's like we both are falling in love again. It'll be just like starting
all right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here until 5. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them in a little bit. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who requested the John Lennon?
Coming to us from John in Decatur.
John in Decatur. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are going to talk about some of the weirder museums in the country, and some of the friendliest states in America, and where we'll find out where Illinois ranks in that regard, as how friendly a state Illinois is. But right now we are talking about the dumbest trends and or challenges to ever exist on social media. And, you know, we've been talking about stuff like the Tide Pod Challenge and some of these other, you know, ridiculous things that take over social media for a while, month, couple of months. They're all the rage, and then most of them are really dumb, and some of them are very dangerous. As we talked about, like the Tide Pod Challenge, dumb and dangerous. But that's what we're talking about here. 312-981-7200. Here's Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, good evening, Nick.
Hi.
The Cinnamon Challenge, that was pretty stupid. I mean, Johnny B even got, what was it, Governor Quinn to do it on air?
He did?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, and he was just, you could hear him just gasp, but he says, I was going to do it because you challenged me.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay, you're our governor and you're doing this dumb thing. What?
You know, yeah, no, that's...
I mean, that was just my idea.
Yeah, that's not...
But yeah, the only challenge I ever did was, when we were in the Army, it was to see how many hot packets... how many hot sauce packets from Taco Bell we could put on a soft shell taco and not reach for our beer.
And how many was the record?
12.
12 hot sauce, like the really super hot Taco Bell sauce.
The hottest ones Taco Bell had.
Yeah, and then 12 of them on one soft.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Wow. Yeah, that's enough.
Yeah, that wasn't me. I got 5, and it's like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. I would not do one.
Yeah.
So, all right. Thanks. Thanks, Rich.
Another thing I thought about is I grew up in the age when our moms used to scream, I'll wash your mouth out with soap.
Yes.
Just thank God they didn't have Tide Pods then.
Yeah. Yeah. They would have enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
throw
Rich. Thanks.
In, slam your mouth shut and spit it out.
Okay.
All right. Have a good evening.
Take care. Yeah, remember when that was, you know, now people, the kids in the past couple of years have been voluntarily eating laundry detergent when, in fact, in my day, that was a punishment for swearing.
Heck, I got that once.
The soap in the mouth?
Yeah, cursed in front of my grandmother, and she put a bar of soap in my mouth.
Yeah, that's
the worst.
That's old school, man.
Yeah.
And, that's like a Christmas story.
I did appreciate a taste for Dial hand soap.
Yeah. Well, he was it Life Boy that they stick that Ralph has in his mouth? And
I remember it's like a big red
red bar of soap. I don't know if it was Life Boy. Yeah,
he goes blind.
He goes blind, right? It's like, don't you look at me like that? I love that when Linda Dillon when he walks away. So the cinnamon challenge that Rich was talking about. This challenge actually traces back all the way to 2001. It's a bizarre abuse of a delicious spice. The challenge is simple. Film yourself eating one spoonful of cinnamon in under a minute without drinking anything to help. After coughing and or vomiting, upload the messy carnage online. The point of the challenge is to watch people go through terrible throat pain as the cinnamon coats and dries their mouths. Most people wind up spitting up a cloud of tan dust in pain and hopefully question their life choices afterwards. And do not try this trend because it has the potential to cause long-term breathing difficulties, pneumonia, and or a collapsed lung. So don't try it. I actually did see someone do it. Like, actually successfully, without coughing, without... There was a video on somewhere, I can't remember where it was. It may have been on Ridiculousness, because you know Ridiculousness, which, by the way, is a show I love, has a lot of these stupid videos. You know, they find videos of people doing really stupid things online, and then they just show them and make fun of them. So I think I saw it on... It was on Ridiculous with Rod Dyrdek and Steelo Brim and Chanel West Coast. My dad loves Chanel West Coast. Loves her. My dad is not the target audience. My dad's going to be 78 in 2 weeks. He is clearly not the target audience for MTV's Ridiculousness, nor should he really like Chanel West Coast, but he does. My dad's like, she's always laughing. She's always happy. Like, okay.
That's a good enough reason to enjoy someone.
Yeah. Let's see here. We got some texts that are coming in. If you guys want to jump in here, spouting off about these really stupid challenges and or trends that sometimes dominate social media, we got a bunch more here. 847 area code says, the ice bucket challenge. I realized that it was supposed to promote awareness for ALS, but it seemed like a lot of people were just doing it for attention for themselves. I thought it was stupid, but it did raise a lot of money. But I didn't do it. Somebody did it and challenged me, and I gave $200 to ALS.
Yeah, I'd rather just do that.
Yeah, that's what I did. Because that was the thing. It's either give money or do the challenge. So what are you doing? You're doing the challenge to avoid giving money to a charity?
You'd rather have ice water poured over your head than help support ALS?
Who was it that, ridiculous. You know who challenged me? It was Dave Ennett. Because it went around the station.
Yeah, I imagine.
Back in those days.
Yeah.
Started with DeCastro, of course. DeCastro was one of his, like, you know, $1,000 suits on.
What?
Went out in front of the showcase studio while Cochran was on, dumped it on his head, and then pointed to Cochran.
Oh,
and
nice.
He was in, like, one of, you know, DeCastro, man. Yeah, you know how he dresses. He's the man.
Yeah.
And so he did it, and then it started to go around. So when Dave did it, he challenged me, and I went, no.
Here's $200, man.
I will, and I did. I donated money to the charity. I didn't do it.
No, I did the same thing. There was another one similar to it where I think it was. I cannot remember for the life.
I think there were two or three more.
It was one that kind of jumped on that. It was one with lipstick.
What do you do with lipstick?
I think it was for like men's health, but you had to put on lipstick. If anybody out there remembers what it was, I got challenged by my cousin in Scotland, so maybe it was a British thing. But this
was to raise awareness and money?
Yes.
For a charity?
Yes. And I gave the money. I just gave the money.
Well, but I mean, that doesn't sound... I've had lipstick on before. I was in drag in two plays.
Yeah.
So I've had lipstick on, and it's no big deal. You put lipstick on. If it's going to raise money, you do it.
I know. I just gave the money.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm just going to... I had to go to work the next day, and I had to go to I was just like, I can't do this. This is when I was working promotions for another radio station.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really don't want to get yelled at because I showed up in lipstick.
Yeah.
Although I can't imagine they would really get that upset, but I was just like, whatever, here's $100. I could spare $100.
Okay. Lipstick challenge doesn't sound as stupid as pouring a bucket of ice water over your head.
No.
773 area code says, I was in the car with my 6-year-old niece who said she was trying to make pieces of school supplies that were edible, like edible erasers and pens. It's a new trick for the teacher. It's a prank. So like they're gonna fake out a teacher by making it look like they're eating erasers when in fact they are edible. So that's a prank. 765 area code says selfies with bears and other wild animals. That's another one that makes me nuts. It's another one that makes me absolutely nuts. People getting mauled by wild animals. Oh, I'm gonna stand right next to this bear and take a selfie, and then you wonder why you get mauled. So stupid.
That'd be a pretty sweet picture, though. As a bear charges you, your horrified face.
Yeah.
Put that on Facebook.
Yeah.
Raise awareness about bears.
You'll get a lot of likes. It's all about likes. How many likes am I going to get if I get the picture with this, you know, mongoose standing behind me? 815 area code planking. Oh, God.
I was a big fan of planking.
Come on.
I thought it was funny as hell.
People laying down and trying to hold still in stupid locations is what planking is, according to this. Yeah. That's in this article. Planking. You thought planking was funny?
I really did. Because, I mean, yeah. That was popular probably when I was in high school.
I just thought it was just stupid. I remember when it was happening. Like, what are these people doing? What is this?
Just planking.
The guy.
Just in odd places.
Just laying on the top of a dumpster. Planking. I just don't understand. I don't understand it. I know I'm an old man and I'm not hip like the youngsters, but it's stupid.
I have to ask though. What, you never did anything like totally inane because you were 14?
Well, sure.
Yeah. If planking came out when you were 14, you might have been.
I don't know. I'm trying to think if I ever did anything. You know, like on some sort of dare or something like that. Most of the time I would just be like, no.
That seems consistent.
I'm not going to do that. That's stupid. You know what I mean? I don't know. Hey, man, let's do hot sauce. No.
Snort this pixie stick.
No. No, I will not do that. I'm sure I did a lot of stupid stuff when I was a kid. I don't remember right now. But for the most part, I think I've been consistently like, well, that just doesn't seem like a good idea, so I'm not going to do it. Now, you know, riding a bike and jumping stuff, that's another thing.
Being a kid
and smacking each other with wiffle bats and stuff like that. Did that consistently. That kind of stuff.
Take the wiffle ball bat challenge.
Yeah.
How many times can you get smacked?
No, we would beat the hell out of each other with wiffle bats, my friends and I. And, you know, we would throw things at each other and stuff like that. But it wasn't like, here, eat this glass. No. I'm not going to eat glass. Now, I will jump a ramp on my bike and fall over and cut my leg open on some glass. That's fine.
Gotta have standards.
But I'm not going to intentionally eat glass.
It has to be an accident.
It's just something stupid. You're just, you know, having fun. Outside, because back when I grew up in the 70s, man, helmets weren't non-existent. You didn't wear knee pads or elbow pads or any of that stuff. You went out on your bike and you smashed into a brick wall and fell into some broken glass. That's what you did. If you didn't come back in the 70s, if you went out to play and you came home without a cut, it wasn't a successful day. I mean, the stuff that we did as kids in the 70s, it's a wonder that we're still alive. And the toys that we had, the unbelievably dangerous toys that were marketed to kids in the 70s. I mean, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. So, all right. Let's take a break here, and then we'll come back. And we've got more to talk about here. If you want to jump in, we're talking about these goofy challenges and stupid trends that happen on social media. All right, let's come back and do more after this. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, me, 2 for Tuesday. Get your request in now, one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up, also, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we are talking about these dumb trends or challenges that dominate social media from time to time. How about this one, the fire challenge? The fire challenge of 2014 was one of the most dangerous and disastrous trends to invade social media. With the cameras rolling, participants would willingly cover themselves in flammable liquid and set themselves ablaze. Firefighters, police officers, and social media sites had to publicly denounce the practice to protect the public's safety. Unfortunately, this challenge has lingered and resulted in serious damage. A 12-year-old girl suffered serious burns after trying the challenge with her friends. One teenager described the afterburn as, quote, unbearable. If you're reading this, please don't set yourself on fire for views. It's very dangerous and very stupid. I don't understand this. Firefighters, police officers, and social media sites had to publicly denounce the practice. Why? How do you not know setting yourself on fire is not good? How do you not know that setting yourself on fire is not a good thing? You have to have firefighters, police officers, and social media sites tell you that it's not good? 708 area code sends in a text, so can you, at 312-981-7200. The Gallon of Milk Challenge, in fact, a local radio station held an event giving a popular game console as a prize, and I believe the winner ended up in the hospital. Yeah, the gallon of the I think that one you're referring to, that contest was a gallon of water.
Yeah.
Contest.
She was, it was a California woman. It was the Hold Your Wee for a Wee challenge.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she died. She died of just holding it in. And actually, they you know, settled against the radio station that did it.
See, here's the thing, though. Now I'm just thinking about this. How much do you think the Jackass guys have to do with why this stuff became popular?
That's a good question. I don't know.
And consider, you know, and look, I don't want to be hypocritical because I personally have every single episode of Jackass and all the movies at home, but they're willingly just doing it to themselves
for sheer entertainment,
so that we don't have to. You know, Steve-O is going to snort wasabi. We don't have to do that. Steve-O, that's why Steve-O exists. Ryan Dunn is around to put a matchbox car up his butt. That's why.
Well, no longer around, unfortunately.
No, I know. Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. He was, I love that guy. He was my favorite of all the Jackasses. Dummy. Driving drunk, man. So stupid. What a waste. But yeah, those guys, you know, but, and again, maybe I'm hypocritical, but I think Jackass is hilarious.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where they're consenting adults and like they're doing.
And the name of the show is Jackass. I mean, that, you know.
They put a disclaimer. They know exactly what they're doing. I feel like a lot of the social media stuff winds up being people who don't really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They don't think about what can happen if you swallow a whole spoonful of cinnamon.
Yeah.
Or
but, you know,
the Tide Pod seems obvious. But.
The Tide Pod is just so stupid. But the other thing is, it's like, well, maybe they're thinking, well, look, Johnny Knoxville became a star. Because Johnny Knoxville, you know, Johnny Knoxville got started. It was all the self-defense stuff they tested out on him. Oh. Like he got tased, he got, you know, he got the beanbag.
The
beanbag shot at him, and that was the first video that they did. That was the first one. It was like, who is this guy who's testing out all this ridiculous stuff on himself? And then so he gets all his idiot friends together, and they just start, that's what the show was. And maybe I'm a hypocrite, but I think Jackass is funny as hell. I do. Yeah. I just don't think it's funny when, like, you know, like 12-year-olds are setting themselves on fire. That's not funny.
No. No.
It's not funny. And it's also really, really stupid. It's really stupid. I don't even think that, as idiotic as the Jackass guys are and as crazy as Steve-O is, I don't think, well, he's sober now, so he wouldn't, a lot of this, he did a lot of that stuff. There's a lot of drinking. I don't know if you know what the official beer of Jackass is. Miller High Life. Watch the Jackass movies.
It's all High Life.
Nothing but High Life.
The champagne of beers.
That was my beer when I was a drinker. If a bar didn't have Schlitz, because Schlitz was my go-to, I would always drink Miller High Life.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's a Jackass beer. I don't know.
The beer of Jackasses.
The beer of Jackasses. The official beer of Jackasses. Here's Big Ed on WGN. Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, hi, Nick.
Hey.
I got two things real quick. One I just heard is a challenge of, I don't know if it was boiling water or just really hot water, and dumping it on your head.
What? For what purpose?
I have no idea. I just heard that the kid who did it, what the news report was about, he had to go to the hospital.
Of course he did. You're going to pour boiling water on your head. You're going to... That's not good.
I don't know. And the other thing I got is, Nick, weren't you the kid that played on the snow mountain right under the L track?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, they took all the I lived right next door to the L station on Addison, the Brown Line L station on Addison. And there was a gas station. Now there's condos there. But there was a mobile gas station slash car wash that was right next to this, to the lot. And there was, underneath the L tracks, there was like an empty lot. And we used to play in the empty lot. We would play baseball down there. And my parents would park our car there. That was when you could actually, you know, park in Wrigleyville, or was Lakeview at that time.
Yeah.
But when we had an enormous snowstorm in early 1979, January 1979, that shut the city down.
Yeah, legendary snowstorm.
Yeah, it was legendary. And they shoveled or plowed all the snow from the gas station car wash underneath the L tracks next to us. So there was a mountain of snow, a giant mountain of snow that we would climb up to and hang from the bottom of the L tracks. We would hang from the bottom of the L tracks.
You've got to be kidding.
No. Our heads would touch the beams. That's how high the snow was. This is 70s, man. Again, no safety, no care.
Oh, jeez.
And so we would get you know, sleds, or like sleds, but you know, the like the stuff that was like a
toboggan, or
no. like a garbage can lid. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, like the big disc,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And we would slide down the hill onto Addison.
Oh my God!
I'm not joking. We would be on the hill. And we would slide down. Sometimes fly out onto Addison Street.
Good Lord!
Yeah, this is 70s, man.
that's not a catch-all excuse. Yeah, well, you know, it was the 70s. Well, that doesn't make it okay.
I'm telling you, man. It was ridiculous. So yeah, I obviously did a lot of stupid stuff, but we had fun. It was fun.
God.
So yeah, Big Ed, I was a lunatic when I was a kid, and we would slide. I'm not kidding. We'd slide right out onto Addison from this giant mountain of snow that was there for like a month. It was there for a month. It would slowly melt down a little bit, but we were out there. We had a feast. So all right, yeah, I was an idiot. I was like 12. No, in 1979, I was 13. That was in January 79. I was 13. So. Okay, let's break here. We've got more stupid social media trends coming up. Thanks, everybody, for the calls, and text us at 312-981-7200. News is after this. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday.
Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday.
312-981-7200. Who requested the Hall & Oates?
Coming to us from Steve.
Steve wanted to hear some Hall & Oates. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are talking about some of the dumbest trends and challenges that ever hit social media and some of the stupid stuff that we did as kids. So, Tom, you were telling me off the air, someone actually texted in and said that there is no Addison Brown Line stop.
Yes, they said that there is no Addison Brown Line stop. There is also not a gas station anywhere near there, and that you should apologize.
Okay. First of all, there is an Addison Brown Line stop. It's at Addison, just west of Ravenswood.
I've literally been there.
I lived next to that Brown Line stop for the first 18 years of my life. As I said, in 1979, there was a gas station slash car wash. And I said, if you were listening, that there are now condos there. It's not a gas station anymore.
Because that was 40 years ago.
Because it was 1979. But in fact, you might want to check your CTA website, because there is an Addison Brown Line stop. And it's been there for many, 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 many years. The station itself is right next to a bar called the Cork Lounge, if you want to check that place out. Yeah. So there is an Addison. I assure you there is an Addison Brown Line stop. And I assure you that there once was a gas station slash car wash. It was a mobile there. And I owe no one an apology. I think you may owe me an apology. And it used to be, it wasn't when I grew up, That wasn't the Brown line. That was the Ravenswood line. Because there was the Lake Dan Ryan, that's the red line. There was the Brown line, is now, well, that used to be the Ravenswood. The Ravenswood. And they all had different, you know, they did not have colors. They didn't go with the colors. Man, I can't remember when the CTA busted into the color. It had to be in the 80s. I would guess late 80s is when they started doing the Brown line, you know, the red line, green line. I think that's when it started. But when I was growing up, it was the Ravenswood train. That was the Ravenswood line. So. But yeah, no, there is. I trust me on this. There is an Addison Brown line.
Actually, it was as recently as 1993, 25
93.
Years. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I knew it was. It was pretty recent. So 25 years that they've been doing that.
It's just weird to think for me. I'm like, wow, it's that recent.
Yeah.
Literally within my lifetime.
Yeah. So, they wanted to simplify it. Just go with the colors. You know, I mean, New York, you got the A, the B, you got all the, it's just letters. They don't, it's not like where they travel. I mean, you know where they travel, but it's just, you follow the long, mm-hmm. what letter it is. So they went colors here.
So was the red line called the 95th?
Lake Dan Ryan.
Lake Dan Ryan.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's the blue line. Sorry. The blue line is Lake Dan Ryan, right? No. Lake Dan Ryan was the red line.
Yeah, because that gets off at 95th.
Right.
Dan Ryan.
Blue line was Forest Park.
Because it goes O'Hare
goes to Forest Park. It goes O'Hare to Forest Park. Can't remember what the actual, maybe it was just O'Hare to Forest Park. Maybe it was just called Forest Park.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Lake Dan Ryan was the red line. That's the one you would take, Lake Dan Ryan, you take the Lake Dan Ryan to go to Comiskey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one.
Sox and 35th.
Yeah, yeah. Sox 35th. It wasn't called that though before.
No.
So, but anyway. 815 area code. We're talking about stupid social media trends. Stupid kids doing the chubby bunny. They would stuff their mouths with marshmallows to see who could stuff the most, and I believe a few kids died from suffocating. What? Some of these kids see Blue Man Group? Was that the problem? But they're not real marshmallows in Blue Man Group. Those are special for the, I mean, because they stuff their face. I haven't seen Blue Man Group and good Lord, 20 years
still going.
Yeah, it's a great show. At least it was the last time I saw it. I saw it in New York before it came to Chicago.
Oh wow.
And it was awesome.
Fred Armisen was in it at one point.
Yeah,
he, not one as one of the Blue Men, but in the backing band.
Yep. Let's see. Caneville Gal says there was a recent social media challenge that involved groups of coworkers lip-syncing to an appropriate or fun popular song. Many were done by public service agencies like fire departments and police departments or general office workers, and they're quite fun. Well, see, now there's nothing wrong with that.
Those are cool.
That's fine. You're not pouring flammable liquid on your arms and setting them on fire. 773 area code says, don't you remember letting Elmer's glue dry, peeling it off your desk at school and eating it? No. No, I remember putting Elmer's glue on my hand and letting it dry and peeling it off, but I did not eat it. I was not a glue eater. I know that there were some, but I did not eat glue. I did not put Elmer's glue on my desk, peel it off, and eat it. That was not something I did.
Who's eating glue?
No, there was a lot of Ralph Wiggum.
Okay, yeah.
Paste eaters. Yeah.
Did paste taste good?
I don't know. I've never tasted paste. I don't know. I'm not a paste eater. I know that there were. I knew paste eaters back in when I went to grade school. There were kids who ate paste. They would take the brush and just go and eat it.
Oh God!
I'm not kidding.
I believe it, but just
see
why?
But see, that's the thing. You know, like even at that age, I was probably 7 or 8 when I saw someone do that. I'm like, that's not cool. That's disgusting, and I won't do that, despite the fact that I'm 7. All right, how about this one? The What the Fluff Challenge. This cute but foolish way to trick your pets trended in the summer of 2018. All you needed was a blanket and your dog or your cat's attention to play. Simply lift the blanket in front of your pet, let them know you're right behind it, then drop the blanket and rush into another room. It's a quick bait-and-switch trick that caught countless animals off guard. Personally speaking, the best videos featured animals that couldn't care less about the joke at their expense. The real joke was on the person making the video, which as a viewer is much more satisfying than a scared kitty. I absolutely agree with the animals that could not care less. I always thought those were very, very funny. And this is another one of those things. This is a challenge that was on the internet, but also because I watch ridiculousness on a pretty regular basis, I've seen a lot of these videos because ridiculousness does feature these. And the funniest ones are the animals that just don't care. Like the blanket drops, the person's gone, and they just kind of go, yeah, it's great. There was one in particular where the person did the thing where, you know, they drop the blanket. It looks like the owner of the animal has disappeared, where the dog just walks up to the blanket and like lays down on it, like just doesn't care. So those are the best ones when the dog doesn't care that you disappear behind the blanket. Those are the best ones. How about this? The Face App Challenge. Well, for a little while there, everybody on my news feed was 93 years old. I don't know. I didn't do it. The Face App first went viral in 2017, and early adapters were instantly hooked on its age-altering Photoshop skills. In 2019, celebs hopped on board. 80 million users plunged into the Face App Challenge. Going viral twice is quite an accomplishment for one app, but Face App fell prey to dangerous internet rumors soon after its second wind. According to one viral tweet, a web developer warned users that the Russian-based app's agreement permit accesses all of your phone's photos, even the pics that you didn't use in the app. This gave the app a dangerous reputation. Reports of the tweet's inaccuracy were said that they were inaccurate. I did not do that, but I did have a lot of people on my news feed that were suddenly very aged. And I'd also, one of my favorite memes came out of that, though. And it was, the famous Batman slapping Robin meme that's like everywhere on the internet. And they use it for different reasons. Well, in this one, it was just Batman slapping Robin. Robin was holding his phone with a picture of an old version of him on it. So I was like, Batman slaps Robin because he was doing the Face App thing. All right. Let's break here. We're not at a shortage of stupid things that people do on the social medias, little trends and little challenges. If you want to jump in with yours that you remember or that was done or that you thought was stupid, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. We've been talking about some of these dumb trends or challenges that exist on social media. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. I was looking online because we were talking about the Addison Brown line stop. So I did a Google image search for the house I grew up in, and it's still there. 1825 West Addison, that second floor. I grew up in that house, and I'm looking at a picture of it right now. And it's the fence is completely different. We barely had a fence next to the L tracks, but it's right there, and it still looks exactly the same. And I don't know what it says. It's a 2-bath multifamily home. We lived on the second floor apartment. I don't know if they turned it into a home now, but we lived on the second floor, and there it is, right there. I could see people standing on standing at the station on the platform outside my bedroom window. I'm not kidding. There were just every morning there would be people waiting for the train, and I could see them just standing like 30 feet away from me on the platform.
Did you ever wave at him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Morning.
Yeah.
Who's this kid?
Yeah. What's going on with this idiot? Why are all those horror posters all over his bedroom wall? What kind of weirdo kid is this?
What's a Suspiria?
Yeah. I had an entire wall when I was 13, going on 14. I had an entire wall for a couple of years that of my bedroom, and I had a this is a big apartment. This was like a really, really big apartment, big two bedroom apartment, really big dining room, big front room, living room, nice big kitchen. It was a big apartment, man. And I had an entire wall of my bedroom dedicated to Phantasm.
Nice,
an entire wall. It's just nothing but Phantasm stuff on the wall.
Is today Angus Scrimm's birthday, or was that yesterday?
It is yesterday.
Yeah.
It was yesterday. Yeah, Angus. Lovely man. Let's see. 708 area code says, just remembered the internet challenge where you would scare your cat with a cucumber or a zucchini. Pet owners would sneak the vegetable behind their pet. And the cats were startled. It was kind of weird and cruel. Yeah, I remember when that was a big thing. I just didn't think it was funny at all. Like, you scare the hell out of your cat. I don't think that's funny.
That's easy. It's easy to scare cats.
It is, but I don't... Why? Why do it? So Esmeralda did it to Smokey.
Oh.
But it didn't care. The cat couldn't care less. Because she knew the cat wouldn't care. Because Smokey doesn't give a damn about anything. By the way, Esmeralda, Leon's going to be on the show Friday morning. We can talk more about Smokey.
Do you think she could bring Smokey?
I don't think Smokey will not want to come down, trust me.
He'll be like, yeah, screw this.
No, so you know, the whole the cat's cucumbers thing, we talked about it on the air, and she's like, all right, I'll try. And so she filmed it, and she knew that, and I saw the video of Smokey, and she put the cucumber down behind, because most of the time when people did the cucumber cat thing, the cat would be eating. They would wait till the cat was eating, you know, and then sneak up behind and put the cucumber there. So when the cat was done eating, he'd turn around and then jump like 50 feet in the air and run out of the room. So Esmeralda did it to Smokey, and Smokey just kind of turned and looked at it and went, yeah, that's great. That's a cucumber. That's fantastic.
Did you ever see the thing where people would throw craft singles
on their kid, on their baby? I don't understand. I have no idea what that even is.
Is it bad that I laughed? Because I just thought it was so silly.
They're slapping, you know, like craft American singles on people on babies' faces.
It was bad if the baby cried, but like sometimes they just throw it on the kid and could be like, okay.
Why is there a piece of cheese on my face?
Like, I don't know what this is.
So here's what they say about the cat versus cucumbers thing in this article. In 2015, people needed a new way to irritate their cats. Like a new way? Just existing irritates your cat. That's why I love cats. I love cats. Cats are just like, yeah,
they're fine.
It's fantastic.
They're funny.
Shut up, feed me, clean my box, and shut up. That's what you should do. Hey, come here, cat. No. Shut up, feed me, clean my box, and then shut up some more. That's what a cat thinks constantly. Looks at you like, yeah, uh-huh, I'm going to fetch. Yeah, sure. Feed me and shut up. So, enter cats versus cucumbers. The premise is quite simple. While your cat is busy eating or licking itself, place a cucumber just out of line of its vision. When it catches a glimpse, hopefully you've got your camera running. Sometimes the cats jump in terror. Other times nothing happens, but should you be doing this to your pet? Cat behavioral experts weighed in, saying that scaring animals by their feeding areas can stress them out and cause harmful long-term damage to how they feel safe. So stop messing with your cats. I remember Steve Dale did a whole thing on it. He talked about it a lot on you know, when he would stop by, and you know, on his own show, and also when he would stop by other people's shows, and was like, don't do that to your pets. Don't do that. I mean, you know, the image of a cat jumping 12 feet in the air might be funny, but it scares the hell out of the cat, and it could do, you know, damage to the cat.
But yeah, you don't want an anxious cat.
That's the last thing you want, is an anxious cat. But no, but I thought it was so funny because because Esmeralda was like, Smokey is not going to care at all, and she did not.
Totally unfazed.
Just totally turned around. There's a cucumber. I was like, yeah, it's fantastic.
Got any more of that fancy feast?
You want to clean my box now? Thank you. quit putting vegetables on the floor. Get busy with the scooper. Get the crap out of my box. And then feed me and shut your mouth.
I'm smoky.
I'm going to go pee on the bed. I love cats. May sound like I don't, but I love them. I'm a cat person over a dog person. I like dogs. I'm fine. But I am definitely a cat person. All right. Well, here's the Harlem Shake. In 2012, American DJ Bauer, is that right? B-A-U-U-E-R, yeah. Bauer, released his debut up-tempo dance track, Harlem Shake. It was a catchy blend of trap, dance, and bass music, but it didn't catch on until almost a year later. The reason people started uploading clips on YouTube of them raging to the song. The Harlem Shake meme was simple enough to replicate. All you had to do was film a quiet room with people looking busy or bored, and then everybody goes crazy when the beat drops. Okay. I don't know if I remember that one, but... All right. Let's break. The news is coming up, and then we got more stupid social media trends to talk about.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and then Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday.
Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday.
One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Who requested the band?
It's coming to us from Rasco.
Rasco. All right.
Vic was very excited because he recognized it.
Vic recognized the band. There you go. And the name of the band is the band. So, yeah.
Even easier.
Yeah. We are talking about some really dumb trends and challenges that ever existed on social media, and we've got a few more of these to jump into, too. And then we're going to talk about weird museums that you can check out in this nation. Mike is in L.A., and he sent a text, 312-981-7200 for talking text. Hey, Nick, I'm sure you were stupid like me, too, and did car sketching when it snowed. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely sketched every winter, every time there was a snowstorm. For those people who might not know what sketching is, that's when there has been a nice big snowstorm, and you kind of sneak on to the back bumper of a car as it's driving down the street, and you basically have your feet on the ground, and you're being pulled by the car while your feet are in the snow. So you're basically grabbing onto the back bumper of a car and being pulled by the car.
It's a classic.
Yep, that's what you call sketching.
Never goes out of style.
No. I don't think people do it anymore. This was a long time ago when we did
that. I used to do that when I was in high school. But usually we'd get like a sled or a...
No, we would just do it with our feet. We would just grab onto the back of the bumper. You know, and inevitably the driver would discover that there are two kids hanging on the back of the car, and they'd go, what the hell? And threaten to put it in reverse, run over us. Again, not safe, very stupid. Not only is it stupid, you know, to be on the back of the car like that, but also like exhaust fumes just pumping right into your face. All right, how about this one? The Kylie Jenner Challenge. 2015, reality TV star Kylie Jenner's face looked very different. Plenty of viewers watched her grow up from the time she was little, so it was surprising to see her on red carpets with a set of new lips. Fans, social media followers, and media mocked her for altering her appearance at such a young age, but then people tried replicating her perkier pout by participating in the Kylie Jenner Challenge. First, you grab a shot glass and place it over your lips and suck. Doctors recommend not doing this because you could break blood vessels around your mouth. So that's how they would do it? They would suck on a shot glass?
Yeah, because it would create all the pressure.
Yeah.
And it would...
Make your lips swell up?
Yeah, make them swell up. And it was horrifying. People were really, like, hurting themselves. And it would last for a while. So you would just have kids with these big swollen up lips look like they just got stung by a bee. Like,
yeah, I guess I was kind of aware of this one.
I was horrified by it, really. It was bad.
Okay. Of course, we get to planking. This peculiar trend has been around for decades, but planking first caught social media's attention in 2009. Suddenly, everyone was sharing photos of themselves lying face down in bizarre and hard-to-reach locations. The more bizarre the location, the better the planking pick. The trend caught on in a major way. New Zealand's Prime Minister John Kaye stood in front of his planking son Max and made it the front page of the New Zealand Herald. He was immediately panned for killing the meme. Turns out you can't be a powerful leader with a sense of humor.
That's one way to get votes,
I guess. Sunburn art. Makeup and body art are major players on Instagram. Having a bedazzled belly or a matte foundation can earn you some serious followers. But in 2015, trendsetters took body art to a whole new level. People would strategically put sunscreen on certain parts of their bodies while letting other parts burn. The result is sunburn art. It's sunburn for the sake of art, but it's super damaging to your body. The Skincare Foundation had to release a statement in response to the growing trend, urging others not to do it. Sunburns can be super painful, but too many of them can put a person at risk for melanoma, the most dangerous form of skin cancer, so don't do that one. So they would purposely put like designs on their body so that their sunburn looked like something. How about hot dog legs? You familiar with hot dog legs?
I think I knew that guy back in the day.
Well, yeah, he used to do weather on my college show. Yeah, hot dog legs! In 2013, one Instagram comment launched this popular beachside trend when Tumblr user at Andrew Paul Davis saw a pair of legs in a bathtub. He thought that they looked like hot dogs. Tumblr loved the visual, and a page devoted exclusively to beachside selfies of bare legs that may or may not be hot dogs was born. The bronze-pink summer skin in the photos look very similar to hot dogs, so sometimes it's challenging to differentiate hot dogs from legs. It's a bizarre, foolish social media trend, but it doesn't put your body in any harm's way. I have seen some of these, and they do look like hot dogs. You can't tell the difference between hot dogs and legs. Cat breading. I remember this. People would put a slice of bread around their cat's face. I never understood. This feline trend took Facebook by storm at the start of 2012. If you take a piece of bread, cut a hole 1 inch larger than your cat's head, keep your kitty calm as you gently place the bread around your cat's head, take a picture, and then become a social media legend. Some cat owners gave it a shot of varying degrees of success. Other owners realized that there may be repercussions to disrupting your peaceful feline and avoided the trend. Let's be real. Cats can be pretty unpredictable. Leave your little cat alone and don't waste food.
Cat breading. Again, how bored do you have to get
to go, you know, I'm going to put a piece of bread around my cat's face.
He'll be like little bread Simba.
It's just ridiculous. How about gallon smashing?
This is just obnoxious. This is just so asinine.
It makes me laugh. I have to say it makes me laugh because it is just the stupidest thing that you'll ever see. And being a big milk consumer, as I am, to see milk wasted like that is just painful.
Well, and also as a former Jules employee.
Exactly. In the dairy department. I was the dairy manager for several years.
Can you imagine if some pimpled face idiot?
I'd kill him. I'd kill him.
Smashing
it
down.
I don't get it, but it still cracks me up when I see it because it's just the stupidest thing I've ever seen. For people who don't know, this trend is not only dumb, but it's also super wasteful. Gallon smashing requires 2 gallons of milk and total shamelessness. Often taking place in a supermarket, the gallon smasher must first smash the gallons of jug and then on the ground and then pretend to slip. The social media gold comes twofold. You get to see someone fall, and someone else turns to look surprised at the person who fell on purpose. Hate to sound like a buzzkill, but if someone has to clean up after your stupid prank, it was more than likely it would be someone else, which is rude. And again, don't waste food. It's the stupidest thing. I don't know. It's just one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. Skyscraper selfies. Now, let's get back into this. This may be the most dangerous of all selfies out there. Skyscraper selfies require someone to scale the tallest buildings around and engage in extremely dangerous photo shoots. Sometimes referred to as roofing. It's a whole different thing where I come from.
That involves shingles.
This really caught on in Russia and Asia. Now, one woman made a name for herself on social media. That would be Angelina Nicolaou, where she had countless skyscraper selfies around Eastern Europe and Asia. The trend is not for the faint of heart.
Just, I mean, we've got it easy. The Sears Tower's got the whole sky deck.
Yeah, which you couldn't pay me to go on.
Really?
Oh, no.
You're quite afraid of heights.
No. And that whole, like, edge thing where you walk out and there's the glasses below your feet.
Yeah.
Kill me. No way.
It does put a certain feeling in your stomach.
Not in a million years would you get me up there. Not in a million years. And the thing leans out, like, over the edge.
Mm.
Not in 1 million years would you get me up there. No. No way. I have issues with standing too close to this window. We're 18 floors up.
Oh, does that give you a little?
It does.
Queasy?
If I look down, I'm Jimmy Stewart. I don't need that in my life.
Just woo.
Yeah, don't need it at all. Man. How about flash mobs? Whatever happened to flash mobs?
They went away. Thank God. So dumb.
They made their debut in 2003. Viral dance routines in the middle of Times Square, choreographed marriage proposals in the aisle 3 of the Home Depot. Their viral videos and social media were large groups of people assembled to do something totally random and then leave immediately afterwards. Here's the In My Feelings challenge. That's the Drake In My Feelings challenge. Oh, and here's the Chubby Bunny, which somebody mentioned. So they're also in this article. Oh, here's another genius one right here. Here's another genius one to add to the setting yourself on fire and the Tide Pod. The condom snorting challenge. You remember the condom snorting challenge? I mean, this is another bizarre case of teens do the dumbest things. Parents and medical professionals alike were up in arms in 2018 when kids on social media were doing the condom snorting challenge. The trend is exactly how it sounds, and yes, it's absolutely stupid to do. According to doctors, the biggest risk is that snorting condoms can be a major choking hazard. As terrible as that sounds, it could also get stuck in your throat and cause infection. So please, teens, find a safer way to impress others and cheat death at your next social gathering. Again, do people need to be told not to snort condoms? Does that need to be said?
I mean, the people who are doing this aren't exactly the next set of brain surgeons.
No. No.
It's just, I just don't understand what level of boredom you have to be at.
To snort a condom.
And especially invent that as a social media trend.
Okay.
Why would you publicly show yourself doing that for free?
You want likes.
At least the jackass guys got paid.
They did. They got paid to do it so we don't have to. We could watch these idiots do it. All right, let's break here for some weather, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap this up. Stupid challenges, stupid trends, all on social media. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN and live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5, as we are every weekday morning. And coming up at 5, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. Coming up at 6 is Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, wrapping up the conversation about weird trends and stupid challenges that people do on social media. We were just talking about the condom snorting challenge. Yeah, that's a thing. How about the mannequin challenge? Another hit song, another viral trend on social media. In 2016, rap duo Ray Shimmerd.
Ray Shimmerd?
Shimmerd? Okay.
I think that's how it's pronounced.
Released a music video for Black Beatles. Throughout the video, people remain completely motionless while the camera moves around them and everyone looks like mannequins. Oh, I totally remember this now. SNL did a promo that year where they did the mannequin challenge. There was enough inspiration for social media, and the mannequin challenge was born. People all over were putting together their own versions of the video and the music in the background. Millions of views later, Ray Shimmerd had themselves a number one song on the Billboard charts. Okay.
Played out well for them.
The 24-hour overnight challenge. What is this? This is our lives every day. The 24-hour overnight challenge. Do you know where your teen is sleeping? If they're trying to complete the 24-hour overnight challenge, then the likely answer is no. That's the point of the challenge. Teens and young adults in 2016 started camping overnight in chain stores and restaurants. I don't remember this at all.
I remember this.
All you have to do is sneak in before closing time and hide undetected until the next day. This is another social media trend that parents won't approve of, as kids are doing it without their parents' permission. An 11-year-old boy from Britain, for example, caused a massive police hunt in 2018, but it turns out he was just camping out in an IKEA. That kid would be so grounded.
Yeah, people would do this in... I remember I had friends who did this in Home Depots. They would do it in... It was easier when it was in a really big store like an IKEA.
Yeah.
Because you could legitimately hide in so many places.
There was this fantastic, classic ABC movie of the week. Because in the 70s, we had the made-for-TV movies, like the ABC movie of the week, and it was called Trapped! James Brolin, okay? It was one of the more popular TV movies of the time, because you'd watch a made-for-TV movie or an ABC movie of the week, and the next day at school, we would all talk about it. Did you watch Trapped? I watched Trapped! Which was one of the more popular ones. This is the plot of Trapped. James Brolin is in a big department store, goes to the can. Some dude bangs him on the head, steals his wallet, knocks him out, and throws him in a stall. He's knocked out. He's unconscious. Store closes. All right? So he's in there. He didn't do this on purpose like the kid at IKEA. He got knocked out, wakes up, no wallet, nothing, head hurts. Store is closed, and... they've released the Dobermans who guard the department store.
Not the Dobermans.
It's James Brolin versus a bunch of Dobermans in a department store, and it was fantastic. Trapped!
I'm sorry, you give me a heart attack every time you do.
It's yeah. James Brolin in a closed department store with a bunch of Dobermans trying to eat him. Classic 70s TV movie.
You got to give him an A for originality.
Oh, it was everybody was like the ratings were through the roof on that one. Everybody watched that one. It was also I think probably one of the more popular ones. Of course, was Bad Ronald. You familiar with Bad Ronald?
Oh yeah,
kids in the hall. The kids in the wall. He's hiding in the wall.
Bill Leff has talked about Bad Ronald
classic.
A few times.
Yeah, it's a Jacoby brother.
It's one of the Jacobies?
It's one of the Jacobies who plays Bad Ronald. I don't know which Jacoby, but a Jacoby plays Bad Ronald. And that's one of the legendary made-for-TV movies of the 70s. That's a legendary one. There's a whole bunch of them. Don't Be Afraid of the Dark with the little monsters. That was Jim Hutton was in that one. Kim Darby, I believe, was the female lead. There were a lot of TV movies in the 70s. That starred Desi Arnaz Jr. and Linda Pearl. They were in like all. It was like if there was an ABC movie of the week, Linda Pearl and or Desi Arnaz Jr. would be in it.
Wait, hold on. Duel was one of the ABC.
Duel
movies
was a TV movie.
Wait, Steven Spielberg's debut. Duel
TV movie. That's not his debut. His debut was Sugarland Express. But Duel
The one where he's, it's him versus a truck.
Dennis Weaver versus a truck, yeah.
I love Duel.
It's a great, it's one of the best movies Steven Spielberg's ever made. It was so popular, it was a TV movie that was so popular, it ended up getting a European theatrical release.
Yeah.
And then eventually it got an American theatrical release.
Because it deserves it.
Yeah.
Is that good? Go Ask Alice was one.
Yeah. No, there's a
ton. There's a ton. Wow. Brian's Song.
Classic.
I love Brian's Song.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yep. Okay, there's a few more. I got a few more of these stupid trends and challenges to get through on social media. We'll wrap that up, and then we'll jump into some museums that you can visit that are just weird. That's all coming up after the news, which is coming up right after we break here. Jam. Who requested Whitesnake?
Coming to us from the 773.
Nice. David Coverdale.
I never appreciated until I was older the sick riffs that Whitesnake would pull out.
Well, that album in particular, the album after that's the one that directly rips off Zeppelin and every... Because Still of the Night is a blatant Zeppelin. I love it, but it's like... Did you just listen to Zeppelin right before you wrote that?
Yeah, even this song sounds similar to Nobody's Fault But Mine. But it's still great. I love it. I think it's good.
I love Whitesnake. Yeah, all right, so we got a twofer from Whitesnake. Yeah! So 312-981-7200 if you want to get in here for your two for Tuesday. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, the Skyline Studio. And we're talking about really stupid trends and challenges that exist on social media. People doing really dumb stuff. And I'm now watching something on the Channel 9 Morning News, what they call the Norway Death Diving Champion. And it's a guy just diving like a maniac into a pool. Like way up there. And they're... These are guys just jumping off, not in any kind of professional way, but spinning and then slamming into the water. There's a lot of stupid people in the world.
Go Norway.
I don't understand. I don't understand. Ay, ay, ay. Vic, were you looking up at the TV? Did you see what I'm talking about?
That would kill me.
Isn't that ridiculous?
I don't think I would survive that.
They're slamming
into
the water.
They're probably 40 feet or so in the air, I would guess, maybe 50.
They do all kinds of ridiculous twists, and they're not landing, you know,
no,
like a professional diver where you're not supposed to splash. You're
flailing
supposed to just,
would be...
Yeah, flailing.
Flailing with style. There was some style in there. Flailing's maybe not the right word.
Flailing and slamming into the water is what they were doing. Wow. Hey, Tom, did you find out if Trapped... is available on DVD?
I'm still trying to find it. It's got to be out there if Duel is on there.
James Brolin Trapped. Dobermans. James Brolin and Dobermans.
Oh jeez. Well, I mean there are many as you might believe there's more than one movie called Trapped.
Oh yeah. I would imagine so, but there's only one with James Brolin and Dobermans.
I'll find it. I'll let you know if I can get it.
All right. Here's some more of these stupid challenges and trends. How about the Falling Stars Challenge? This social media trend was all about extravagance and looking injured. To get the right photo, all you had to do was look like you fell flat on your face with your possessions scattered around you. It started in Russia and evolved into a competition to show off how incredibly wealthy you were. Eventually, it took the social media world by storm, and less fortunate put their own twist on the trend. Instead of showing off designer clothing and jewelry, people would show off items that spoke more to their character, which in comparison to the self-mutilating challenges sounds more pleasant. I don't even remember that at all. How about the Don't Judge Challenge? At first, this trend came from a good place. At least that's what beauty blogger and Don't Judge Challenge creator M. Ford's story was. In a 2015 clip for her YouTube channel, the blogger wipes off her makeup to reveal her true self in an attempt to denounce beauty standards. Her wholesome Don't Judge a Book by Its Cover attempt went viral, but social media quickly turned this trend into rubbish. Instead of posting empowering photos and videos, people instead made themselves look uglier by drawing on fake unibrows and acne and freckles. And then the hashtag was unfortunately hijacked by pranksters.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. How about the Momoch? Oh, this thing.
My young cousins would not shut up about this.
The Momo Challenge. This was a classic case of web hysteria and parents not talking enough with their children. According to the news reports in 2019, the Momo Challenge was your child's DMs with commands to commit violence against others. Social media representatives and web experts claimed that there was no evidence that any child was driven to violence by the Momo lady. A little bit of internet sleuthing later, the first image of the Momo lady was found. She wasn't a demonic chicken lady coming after your children. She was an art sculpture in 2016 made by a Japanese artist. That face was everywhere.
Yeah, it did freak me out. It was a scary sculpture.
It's a very it's a creepy looking thing. Yeah, they did a very, very funny commercial parody with Kate McKinnon on SNL where she had the she had the makeup. The backpack challenge. You know the backpack challenge?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
This 2016 trend had the potential to be really dangerous. One person tries to run through two rows of people that all launch their backpacks to knock down the runner.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this I do know.
These chaotic clips were all the rage to high schoolers, but this challenge could have seriously injured someone. Remember how heavy your textbooks were in high school? They were massive. It's honestly a surprise that we didn't now imagine all those 30 backpacks filled with heavy textbooks being launched in your direction. I've not seen that. I don't know that one. The backpack challenge. How about the Charlie challenge? This paranormal trend actually dates back many years in Spain. Multiple generations of young people have played. Oh, I'm not even going to attempt this. It's the pencil game. In 2015, it made its crossover to the States, renamed Charlie Challenge. All you need is two pencils and a piece of paper. First, you label four sections of the paper, yes or no. Next, you balance the two pencils perpendicular on top of each other, creating a grid. Then you ask Charlie, the all-knowing supernatural entity, a question. The supernatural forces or the wind will point to the right answer. It's about as magical as the magic eight ball. You pick a scarier name than Charlie, though? Why don't you just call him Biff? How about car surfing? This trend is also one of the most dangerous in the article here. Dating back to the 80s, car surfing is when someone hops on top of a moving car and pretends to ride it like a surfboard. Yeah, it was because they saw Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolfing.
According to reports from the Centers of Disease Control, 58 deaths were associated with car surfing between 1990 and 2008. Adrenaline junkies and teenage boys beware. Stay in the seat of your car and stop trying to car surf. Okay. And then finally, the Banana Sprite Challenge. What? The Banana Sprite Challenge. This eating challenge is gross to the core. Challengers are tasked with quickly eating two bananas and following them up with 1 liter of Sprite. This is where things get gross. You win the challenge if you don't vomit afterwards. The challenge implies that the body can't digest bananas and carbonated beverages at the same time. It also is possible that your body ate too much too fast, resulting in vomiting. This challenge, like any other food challenge, is not a dish that we would like to eat. I've never even heard of that before.
No.
The Banana Sprite Challenge? Shovel two bananas down your throat and then drink a liter of Sprite. Why? Look, I like bananas and Sprite just as much as the next guy. But I'm not going to do that. All right, well, there you go. This entire article, by the way, of all of these trends and all of these challenges that are out there is on our Facebook page, as is everything that we talk about. So you should like us right now. It's Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let's take a break for the weather. And when we come back, the strangest museums in every state. Lots of weird buildings dedicated to weird things that are collecting. And museums. There's a lot of strange ones out there. Some of them are really hilarious, too. And we'll get into that. Have you ever been to, like, a strange museum and you want to jump in with your thoughts? It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for weird museums if you want to talk or text us. All right, welcome back, everybody. That's Whitesnake doing Zeppelin here on WGN. 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. There are some really weird museums in this country. From disturbing oddities to why does this deserve an entire museum subjects, here are some out-of-the-box attractions that make America what it is. So for each state, they have picked a weird museum. So for Alabama, in Summerdale, Alabama, they have the Spear Hunting Museum, which was founded and dedicated to the late Gene Morris, the self-proclaimed greatest living spear hunter in the world in his day. Most of the walls are covered with taxidermied animals, animal heads, and horns from his expeditions. So this is the Spear Hunting Museum in Alabama. In Alaska, you've got the Hammer Museum. I'm assuming that has nothing to do with MC Hammer. The Hammer Museum in Haines, Alaska, apparently the world's first museum dedicated to preserving the history of the hammer. All right. Arizona, the Mini Time Machine Museum of Miniatures. The Mini Time Museum, Time Machine Museum of Miniatures. This is no ordinary museum. The Mini Time Machine Museum of Miniatures tells stories, historic, magical, and everything in between, through tiny figurines. Okay. How about this? Arkansas, Max Blades Auditorium and Curiosities Museum. Oh, this one sounds... How would you... What would you expect from illusionist Maxwell Blade except a collection of the weird and wonderful? Fair warning, Maxwell Blade's Auditorium and Curiosities Museum isn't for the easily creeped out. The museum is an extension of the Hot Springs Theater where he performs, and it's filled with some of the strangest artifacts you'd ever know. Stop by before the show or any day to catch a glimpse of more than 300 items of intrigue, like an accidentally mummified cat, preserved reptiles, and a model ship that uses human hair for its rigging. How about this in California? The International Banana Museum. Is there a Sprite Museum next to it?
Don't combine the two.
There's just something appealing about the International Banana Museum. As its website says, it holds all the banana-related items that you could possibly think of and you've never even thought of. Just a taste of its memorabilia include banana record players, banana staplers, banana slippers, jade bananas, alabaster bananas, and wooden bananas. So if you like bananas, then the International Banana Museum is for you. 301 area code, send in a text at 312-981-7200. I've been to the Crime Museum in Washington, D.C., which houses the Bonnie and Clyde death car and the entire Unabomber cabin. The entire cabin?
How'd they get it all in there?
Wow. Break it down, bring it in, rebuild it.
I guess so. That's kind of freaky.
Colorado, Lee Maxwell Washing Machine Museum. Just in case you wanted more laundry in your life, the Lee Maxwell Washing Machine Museum is home to all the washers you wanted and many, many more. How about this? In Connecticut, the Witch's Dungeon Classic Movie Museum. Oh. When you see a name like Witch's Dungeon, you know you're about to get a spooky experience unlike anything else. The idea started in 1966 when then 13-year-old Cortland Hull thought Wax Museum Chamber of Horrors were lacking, and his smaller monster models just weren't cutting it. His parents helped him build life-size models, and he made enough to open a full-size museum dedicated to classic horror and sci-fi movies. Since then, the collection and its artifacts have grown and improved, and the museum has gotten support from big-name actors like Vincent Price. Visit to see your favorite or most feared Hollywood monsters like Frankenstein and the Phantom of the Opera. That's in Connecticut. See, now that I'd go to.
Sounds like a fun trip to Connecticut.
I would go to that in a second. How about this? Florida, the Waste Pro Garbage Truck Museum. The Waste Pro Garbage Truck Museum is an ode to the oft unthanked industry of garbage collection. You probably prefer to just toss out the garbage and forget about it, but this collection of unique trucks will make you want to know more. Any car lover will want to take a closer look at the 1926 flatbed, just like the one that the Waste Pro CEO's dad drove back in the day. And Movie Bus should seek out the truck that Denzel Washington rode in Fences. All right. How about this? In Georgia, they have the Vidalia Onion Museum. When there's a bulb vegetable named after your town, you better believe you'll be honoring it. The Vidalia Onion Museum goes through past and present, showing how the humble onion changed the economy and cooking. You can even see the onions in action. The tiniest registered Vidalia onion field is on the museum ground. Find out the best state fair or food festival in your state as well when you check it out. All right, how about this? In Hawaii, Big Island Bees. Get the latest buzz on your pollinating friends at the Big Island Bees Museum. You can learn all about how beehives function and how the insects find nectar, plus check out artifacts from the human side of beekeeping. Better yet, book a spot on a beekeeping tour. They'll get you up close and personal with the bees themselves. And you get free honey samples. Okay. How about this? Idaho. Well, the Idaho Potato Museum.
Naturally.
When you're passing through the potato capital of the world, it's only appropriate you make a stop at the Idaho Potato Museum. You can learn all about that first spud planted in Idaho soil, the evolution of the farming process, potato nutrition facts, the world's largest Pringle. What? The world's largest Pringle? All that learning is bound to make you work up an appetite, so any visit should end with a trip to the cafe's baked potato bar with a potato cupcake as a sweet ending. That sounds like a place I would like to... I want to see the world's largest Pringle. I'm intrigued by the world's largest Pringle.
What flavor do you think it is?
I have barbecue. I don't know.
That would be kind of cool.
All right, we're going to break here. We got the news coming up. And then after the news, we're right at Illinois. So we will find out what strange museum has been cited in this article that is located in Illinois. And we'll do that after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, who requested that?
That's coming to us from Jeff, and it's a little Styx.
Yeah, Styx. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking a little bit here about some weird museums, some of the strangest museums that that you could go to. And we got some texts. If you want to jump in with a phone call or a text, some unusual places that you've been to or museums that you've visited, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Dan says there is a bottle cap museum in Michigan. It's modeled after a 50s diner. And it's just bottle caps. Okay. 773 code says, not yet. Not sure if it's been mentioned yet, but the U.S. Pizza Museum is in Chicago on Roosevelt. The U.S. Pizza, I've never been there. Do they just have, like, all kinds of different pizzas from around the lands? Yeah, I've never been there. Okay. 309 area code says, in Peoria, Illinois, there's the Wheels of Time Museum. Okay. Now, according to this article, they pick a museum from each state, what they think is sort of the most unique or the strangest museum from each state. So here's Illinois. Illinois has the American Toby Jug Museum. The American Toby Jug Museum. Toby jugs are shaped like people or famous faces, and there are more than 8,000 staring out from the shelves at the American Toby Jug Museum. Among its collection of real and fictional famous and ordinary characters includes the world's tallest Toby jug at 40 inches tall and the world's smallest. So there you go. Has anybody ever been to the Toby Jug Museum? I've never even heard of Toby Jugs. This is the first time I've ever heard of a Toby Jug. All right, how about this? In Indiana, you've got the RVMH Hall of Fame. Visit for the Hall of Fame dedicated to the greats in recreational vehicles and motorhomes, but stay for the RV Founders Hall Museum. It's the ultimate road trip down memory lane showcasing icons like the 1931 Chevrolet house car owned by actress Mae West and the 1985 Bounder that will look familiar to any Breaking Bad fan. What about, you know what, they should get the Winnebago from Lost in America.
Oh, yeah.
Skippy, out. Iowa, Matchstick Marvels. Models made of matchsticks aren't the most popular artistic medium, but that's exactly what makes the artist Pat Acton's work all the more impressive. His intricate creations displayed at the Matchstick Marvels Museum are as beautiful as they are mind-boggling. His Notre Dame Cathedral model is made from 298,000 matchsticks, and the life-size sci-fi-inspired steam engine took more than a million. How about this one? We got to get to Kansas. You know why, Tom?
Why? What we got?
We have to visit the Kansas Barbed Wire Museum. There's that one room in the Dance Academy in Suspiria that's dedicated to barbed wire. But this is an entire museum. Bet you didn't know there were more than a handful of types of barbed wire, let alone the 2,000 varieties displayed at the Kansas Barbed Wire Museum. 2,000 varieties of barbed wire?
I didn't think they had that many varieties. I thought there was just barbed wire.
Yeah, me too. But that's not all this museum has in store. It's also full of bottles of quack cures for barbed wire injuries.
For all those times that you get hurt by barbed wire. Escaping prisons and such.
Drink this liquid. A life-size cowboy diorama, and if you're lucky enough to visit in May, a convention of buying and selling wires and world championship for barbed wire splicing. That's a whole competition, splicing barbed wire. All right, how about this? In Kentucky, the Vent Haven Museum. It's hard to believe that there's apparently only one ventriloquism museum in the world, and that's the Vent Haven Museum. It features more than 900 dummies.
So that's where they come from.
Why am I blanking on the movie, the animated movie that came out this year where they had the ventriloquist dummies guard the... Oh, it's Toy Story 4.
Oh. Yeah.
It's Toy Story 4. They had the ventriloquist dummies. That would be a little creepy. I don't know. A ventriloquism museum. I don't know. I would probably find that a little bit creepy. Louisiana There's the Abita Mystery House. You don't have to go to New Orleans to be met with strange things in Louisiana when there's places like the Abita Mystery House in Abita Springs. You never know what you'll find, but it's easy to see why it's considered the state's most eccentric museum. Feast your eyes on a collection of combs, which don't seem to have any special significance. A dog-a-gator, which is a dog-alligator hybrid. A dog-a-gator? Wow.
That sounds pretty nightmarish.
In Maine, the International Cryptozoology Museum. Cryptozoology is the international, as the International Cryptozoology Meeting explains, is the study of hidden animals. No, not shy or near extinct animals, but ones that have never been seen by humans. Like ever. Despite the lack of scientist-approved evidence, these rare beasts, this museum is filled with evidence like a real yeti hair and footprints, plus models of creatures like the feline serpent Tattleworm and the Beast of Bray Road. Okay. In Maryland, the Havre de Grace Decoy Museum. Decoys have first been made to lure ducks in for hunters, but at this museum, they attract humans too. Those who think duck decoys sound pretty blasé will be impressed by their craftsmanship, not to mention the rich history of waterfowling in the region. So that's in Maryland. In Massachusetts, it's the Museum of Bad Art. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but the Museum of Bad Art is here to remind you it's okay to think some art is just not good. Its gallery is currently closed for renovations, but when it reopens, it'll be back to featuring some of its 700 pieces. Like an oil painting of a Red Sox player being eaten by a centaur-like fan. A painting of an Aztec emperor who seems to be high-fiving a man in a turban. Despite some of the cheeky descriptions put together by the Museum of Bad Art, some of the artists do have some undeniable talent. See, now I'd go to that. I would definitely go to that. Okay, in Michigan, they chose Knowlton's Ice Museum of North America. The Knowlton's Ice Museum of North America is dedicated to all things ice. Ice picks, ice wagons, ice boxes, ice crushers, ice buckets, ice plows, ice, well, you get the idea.
Vanilla ice.
Vanilla ice, that's right. If you get your fill of those cool artifacts, rest easy knowing that while the founder was busying himself hunting down ice-related memorabilia, his wife had her own side project collecting dolls, of which 300 of them are featured in the museum. So it's ice and dolls.
I don't remember that musical.
That just seems weird to me. Now, here's a classic one, Minnesota. Spam. Spam Museum. And I happen to love Spam. And there have been listeners who've gone to the Spam Museum who have brought back stuff for me. I got a Spam T-shirt. I got a Spam recipe book. People have purchased Spam for me over the years. Our good friend Deanna bought me some Spam because I unapologetically love it. I love Spam. Love it or hate it, you're bound to learn something new at the Spam Museum in Austin, Minnesota. It's a quirky, punny space where you can hear all about the canned meat's role in World War II, race to produce your own faux Spam, and, of course, taste a Spam pull of the product. See, Spam pull, not sample, Spam pull. Yeah, I don't care. I happen to love Spam. But by the way, I saw something on the intranets, and I'm not sure if it's true, but there's a pumpkin spice Spam.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know if it's real, because I know that they make up fake pumpkin spice, like right around this time, because, you know, the pumpkin spice stuff starts like next week. Do you know that?
Like next week?
Next week. The pumpkin...
It's August.
The pumpkin spice frappuccino at Starbucks and the pumpkin spice a latte at Dunkin' they debut next week. Which is fine with me, because the sooner fall gets here, the happier I am. Because it's my it's my favorite time of year.
It's I love the fall. My birthday's in the fall. Yeah. Halloween's in the fall. So it's great.
Yeah.
But I just feel like August is a little early.
It's a little early for pumpkin spice.
Was the week after that, the Christmas ads start.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Christmas stuff, Christmas and Thanksgiving stuff, honestly, it starts after Labor Day. Like, they start pulling that stuff out maybe about a week after Labor Day. So, like, you know, second week into September, you'll see some Thanksgiving stuff up and Christmas stuff.
And I don't know if this is an exclusive, but pumpkin spice spam is coming.
It's a real thing.
Yeah, it's the CNN reporting.
Oh, man.
Holy cow.
Wow.
Well, we'll have to get a tin of that.
I'll try it.
Yeah.
Because, one, it's spam.
That's going to be a spam
and
taste test.
And I love all spam. Spam, 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 spam. 815 area code says, while on a family trip to the Wisconsin Dells, my dad pointed out the car window and said, hey, look, there's the marriage chapel. And he was actually pointing to a torture museum. Well, same thing, in my opinion.
What was it? Was it Groucho Marx that said... Marriage is an institution, and no one wants to live in an institution.
That's exactly right. 847 area code says that Cathedral of Junk in Austin, Texas is the coolest thing ever. It's a collection of junk sculptures. I haven't been to Austin in a long time. I love that place.
It's awesome.
I love that place.
Waterloo Records is one of the best record stores I've ever been to.
The place is really cool. There's a lot of cool stuff in Austin. All right, we're going to break here. We got the weather. And then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the show and wrap up all of these crazy and strange museums that you can see in every state. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Tuesday morning. Yeah, two for Tuesday. We wrapped that up. We'll do it again next Tuesday. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right here on WGN. All right, we've been talking about strange museums in every state, and we're up to Mississippi, where they have the Apron Museum. They have over 3,500 aprons.
And they all say, kiss the cook.
Yeah. Missouri has Layla's Hair Museum, which boasts that it's the only hair museum in the world. That we can't imagine why no other exhibit space would want to feature so many artworks made with human hair. Montana has the Dumas Brothel. As the longest-running brothel in the United States, the Dumas Brothel managed to stay up and running for almost a century, from 1890 to 1982. The historic building later operated as a museum, revealing some of the ill-reputed activities of yesteryear in the mining town. In Nebraska, there's the Clown, with a K, like Killer Clowns from Outer Space, Clown Doll Museum. Stay far, far away from Plainview, Nebraska, if clowns or dolls give you the creeps. For everyone else, the Clown Doll Museum is a quirky collection that's been around since the Plainview Clown Band started playing Oompa Oompa music back in the 50s. Say hello to Stumpy, the 8-foot clown, before stepping inside and seeing thousands of clown dolls that have been donated to the museum over the years. That sounds like a nightmare for there are probably people who would not be able to sleep for a couple of weeks after visiting that place. How about in Nevada? You can go to Tom Devlin's Monster Museum. When TV and film special effects makeup artist lets audiences get close up and personal with his mask creations, you get Tom Devlin's Monster Museum. Horror fans would get the chills in a good way when they come face to face with some of the stuff. That sounds another cool one. Here's Al, 815 area code, and Al says, perhaps you've already mentioned it, but the National Bobblehead Museum is in Milwaukee. It was founded by a couple of guys from Rockford. Great show as always. National Bobblehead Museum. I have a few good ones on my on the desk in our office.
Yeah. I think, is the Gritty one a bobblehead?
Gritty is a bobblehead, yes.
Love the Gritty.
Deanna got me that. Gritty. One of the greatest mascots ever. New Hampshire, the New Hampshire Snowmobile Museum, if you're interested in that. New Jersey, the Silver Ball Museum Arcade. Vintage pinball machines, Galaga, Pac-Man, they've got all of it. New Mexico, International UFO Museum and Research Center. This one was a given. New York Museum with two M's and two M's at the beginning and two M's at the end. It's the smallest museum in New York City. It sums up its vision pretty well. Now is always weird. Now we must have been weird for the Neanderthals. Now was certainly weird during the Middle Ages. It's the smallest museum. North Carolina, they have a museum called Elsewhere. Elsewhere bills itself as a museum, but the title doesn't quite capture the heart of this creative playground. After the owner of an old thrift store passed away, her grandson declared nothing for sale and reopened the old shop as a museum artist residency. Now visitors can hunt through frozen in time collections of toys, typewriters, clothes, and more. Well, that's pretty cool. North Dakota, the Paul Brost Rock Museum. Bunch of rocks, big collection of rocks. In Ohio, you could visit the Pencil Sharpener Museum.
Oh, boy. Come on, kids.
Oklahoma, the American Banjo Museum. In Oregon, the Freaky But True Peculiarium. This attraction is not for the faint of heart. Spooky music sets the mood as you look over your shoulder, larger-than-life Bigfoot staring back, photo ops facing the whole scene of aliens disemboweling their visitors and more. I'd go to that. Pennsylvania, Mr. Ed's Elephant Museum. 12,000 strong, a collection of circus souvenirs, toys, and figurines from around the world that represent the elephant. All right. South Carolina, the Terrific Teapot Museum. South Dakota, the International Vinegar Museum. Tennessee, the Salt and Pepper Shaker Museum. Oh, you knew there had to be.
Eventually, yeah.
All right. All right. How many pairs do you think that they have?
Of salt and pepper shakers?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 15,000.
20,000. Nice guess. 20,000. Texas, the Dr. Pepper Museum.
That sounds like
fun. Because the original bottling plant was in Waco.
Nice.
Utah, the Museum of Natural Curiosity. That's another one of those weirdo museums. Vermont, Bread and Puppet Theater. What do bread and puppets have in common? Both food and theater are necessary for the body and soul. Thus, one theater company's idea of a piece of bread with every puppet show was born in 1963. It's a collection of the company's old puppets, filling a 150-year-old Vermont farm to the brim. Virginia, Shenandoah Caverns. Washington, the Nutcracker Museum. Oh, but just 7,000 pieces of nutcracker, 7,000 nutcrackers in there. That, again, would freak me out, too.
Yeah, I've never liked the look of nutcrackers.
West Virginia, the Mothman. Oh, the Mothman Museum.
Do you think they have Richard Gere there?
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, I would so go there. I would go there, yeah. And they have the Mothman Festival in September, late September. Oh, I would so go there. My ex-wife would freak out. My ex-wife, Heather, she says that Mothman Prophecy is the scariest movie she's ever seen. Scared the hell out of her. Wisconsin, the National Mustard Museum. All right.
Woo!
Our good friend Barry Levinson, not the director of Rain Man. And then finally in Wyoming, it's the Medicine Bow Museum Fossil House. It's a fairly local history museum. Covering the railroad and the historic Virginian Hotel, Native Americans, and more. But the fossil cabin is what you really want to check out. So there you go. Visit them. Visit all those places. So, all right. Tomorrow, by the way, is Wednesday, so we'll have Wildcard Wednesday. We'll have another edition of Know Your Onion, where you have to tell the difference between a real news headline and an onion headline. And horror icon, producer, and director Brian Usna is going to join us to talk about his crazy horror film, Society, which is being screened at the Music Box this week. So that's what's coming up on the show tomorrow.